Linux Link Tech Show. The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the Linux Link Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up. Link it up and take it away. Take it away.
Yeah.
What's that?
You smell fish?
Don't look at me, man.
Don't look at me. That's why I work alone over here.
Your neighbor's cooking bacalao.
Hide that smell a little bit, you know?
So here we are, episode 147. We've got a special guest tonight. We've got Chris DeBona from Floss Weekly and from Google. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yay.
I'll stop typing on IRC now.
Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate you, you know, coming in and hanging out with us.
Yeah.
Now you get the opportunity to repeat everything you've already said on the IRC and to us before the show.
Right. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So think of that as like
practice
rehearsal.
Run is over, right?
Well, then let's start with how we started earlier. Can you hear me drinking my iced tea?
No, all right. So I guess we could start with the podcast. We really like your podcast. You and Leo are doing a great job. Another great show added to the Twit Army. Another show in the lineup.
Yeah. What he said.
Was that your idea to do that show, Floss? Or was that something that Leo wanted
to do? So what happened was... I'd been thinking about doing a podcast for a while, but I honestly couldn't get off my butt and do it because it takes time, and I had to buy gear. I didn't have to buy gear. I could have done off the laptop microphone. But to do it right, I wanted to buy gear, and then you have to pay money for things. Anyway, the important thing here is that Leo came to me and he said, Chris, we had a good time on TechTV. Why don't you come do a free software thing on the Twit network? And I was like, okay. So we set it up, and we called some of my friends, and we... Started doing the Floss Weekly thing, and so far it's been pretty exciting. Because I have to be honest with you, I had no desire to go out and promote myself and say, hey, come listen to my podcast and that kind of thing. You kind of have to do it if you're going to do it right. And he's good at that, right? He's really, really good at that. And so I figured let him do what he's good at and help me sort of do the interview stuff because I'm not great at that. I'm okay. And then so that's Floss Weekly.
Now, do you guys actually record in a studio?
Well, we have studios here at the company that I use. But, you know, so what will often happen is, Leo will be up at his place in Pleasanton or Marin or wherever the heck he is, and I'll be in the sound room here. And then we'll either Skype in other people or we'll have them there on campus. And like when Ryan was doing the most recent one with us, I just grabbed him and went to the sound room. It was fun, so... And it's like this really cool room because it's all black and covered with this like fuzzy stuff and all the rest. So
hey, maybe that's what's wrong with our sound, Dan. We need to have a room that's all black covered with fuzzy stuff.
Well,
it's thick fuzzy stuff too. It's like 3 inches thick and it's made of cotton and fiberglass and it's cool.
There's some really fuzz in the.
It's like freaky
the fans.
Quiet. I'm not in there right now. I'm like in my office.
It's like recording inside the belly of a giant teddy bear, huh?
Yes, a big teddy bear.
So, Chris, you go way back with Linux. How did you start with Linux originally?
I'm a slacker, and I had an operating systems class, and I was really, really tired of the Sun Lab. It smelled funny, it was packed, and all the Sun machines were really, really slow, and I had homework to do, and it was hot. So what I did was I went by and I got some Linux CDs and I installed it on this 486 or 386, 486 machine that I had. And this was 95, 94, something like that. And I managed to get my homework done and turn it in and they were like, wow, you got that done really fast. And I was like, yeah, it's because I didn't use the stupid Sun Lab. Not that Sun was bad, it's just, crap, it was full. And so I installed it and it worked great and it was Slackware and all hail Slackware. And it was great. So I just used it from then on. And it's funny because I mostly used it in just for programming. I never really went into the operating system until later. And, I worked and mostly worked with, like, really bizarre, like, weird Microsoft products, like Microsoft Mail for the Macintosh and things like that until I finally got to do it for a living, you know, which was good.
So you still running Slackware today?
No. Actually, I run Ubuntu almost universally now, unless I'm playing Half-Life 2, in which case I use Windows. But but I mostly use Ubuntu. I'm really, really happy with it. I've got XGL running on there, you know.
Because you
it's good.
You worked at Slashdot for a while, right? And then you
would in VA bought Slashdot, and then I was at VA for about 3 years, and I hopped over to Slashdot because I knew those guys for a long time. Back in the day, back before computers now, back in the day when we had when Slashdot was just starting out, we sent them like a whole bunch of hardware because they were really slowing down. It was when they were still in Holland, Michigan. And so in return, they made us their default ad. So whenever their ad system would break, they would run this really old VA ad. Right, VA Linux, VA Hardware was the name of the company that I worked at. And then we bought them after they were bought by another company, and we bought that company. And then we all combined, and there were lots of companies. And and as my daughter was being born, my wife and I moved up into the sticks and the mountains of California, you know. And I decided to hop over the Slashdot side of the fence, and basically, because it can all be done remotely, and it's a very remote team, and it's all good. So I ended up doing that for about a year and a quarter, give or take. I posted about, I don't know, 800 stories, about 300 polls, and it was fun. But it's not like I started there, started the site or anything. That was all Robin Jeff. So.
Cool, and you were doing some gaming for a while, right? You were building gaming?
You're reading some of these.
I
ran a game company. Well, I helped run a game company into the ground. Really, we started a game company called Damage Studios, and it was doing a massive multiplayer online game, and it wasn't so great because we ran out of money, mostly. And so that was about 2 years ago. Shut that down. Two and some years. And then I went and looked for a full-time job, and I ended up here. So,
got to pay the bills, right?
Yeah, bills are good. Rent is good. And, and it was funny because I was talking to a bunch of firms about going to work for them, and Google found me and rescued me and made me happy. So I was happy, and here I am being happy.
So how is Google? We hear it's a great place to work at these days.
Yeah, it is, actually. I don't know how much you want to make this commercial for Google hiring and stuff like that. It's pretty darn terrific. I work in this building, I have an office here with, we actually were crammed in like sardines, though. We usually have like 3 people to the office, sometimes 4. And, but the facilities are amazing. They give us like 3 square meals a day for free, and mostly organic food, and it's all really good. And, you know, it's actually kind of absurd sometimes. You, like, walk around going, I can't believe how much stuff they're giving us. You know? In fact, the headphones I'm using right now were part of this test about, like, what are the best headphones to give engineers, you know? And so they, like, set us up, like, these 5 different, like, really high-end headphones. And, like, one of the mid-range ones won because they kept out the sound and it had good sound quality. And it was, it's kind of interesting to work here. So
what do you exactly do for Google?
Well, you know, I vacuum and I'm not good at that. So my job at Google is I'm the open source programs manager, and what that means is that I monitor license compliance. So if we take a piece of open source software and bring it into the company, I make sure that we are compliant with the licenses, and I do this to both the spirit and the letter of the license. So that's the first primary job. Frankly, any company that uses open source software, you should use them appropriately, right?
Right.
So I'm good at that. And so I set up a compliance system and process here. And that was sort of the first thing I did when I got here. And then I started something called the Summer Code, which basically pays students to work on, open source software over the summer, you know, so, because a lot of people have to take a job or whatever during the summer. And we figured, why not have them work on open source software? So it's just a little program that I got last year. So about 400 cents that we pay, about $5,000 a pop to work on open source for the summer. So I'm running that. And let's see now. What can I talk about? We release a fair amount of code, too, you know, and we patch a lot. So making sure we do that right is a full-time job. So,
well, let me ask you a question about the compliance issue. Because we hear time and again how some open source licenses are viral and problematic, and particularly in commercial environments. What exactly are you looking for with regards to compliance that, you know, they need somebody like yourself to make sure they are compliant? I mean, you know, a lot of people just would go out and say, well, it's GPL software or it's open source software. I can use it, you know, but, you know, in my company, how I see fit, I'm not really distributing it. So, I mean, what is there to be concerned about?
Well, we do have a fair number of programs that are downloaded, so making sure that if those have GPL, they're LGPL, they're MPL, they're MPL, they're CDL components, that we're compliant with those licenses can be kind of tricky, right? So that's there. We do ship something called the Google Search Appliance, which people can install in their corporate, you know, environments to bring sort of a Google-style search to their internal documentation, that kind of thing. So making sure that we're not breaking the rules there is a really good thing. But also, you know, there's this other side to it that, you know, open source licenses don't really require that much from you if you're going to use them, especially in an environment where most of your stuff is served over the web. But you still want to use them right because you don't want to lose track of where the code is. You don't want to lose track of where you got it. And you want to keep up with things like, you know, security and all the rest, right? So some companies, the way they do this is they say no GPL software, period. Right, because they don't want to have the reciprocal nature of the GPL opening up intellectual property that they're not looking to open up. Right,
right.
Other companies, we try to take, like Google, we try to take it more nuanced view of the GPL, right, so that we can tell organizations, you know, within the company, okay, you want to use this stuff, great. If you ship, you're going to have to do this and this, and if you're okay with that, then go ahead and use it, right, and keep it sort of in the right place. And that way we're able to take advantage of some very, very powerful software. So now in return, we think it's really important that we, you know, try to participate in these communities, right? And you have to realize that when you hear most big companies say the word community, what they're really saying is take advantage of somebody, right? And we try to take a more appropriate view of actually trying to take part. Right, so we have a lot of engineers who send back patches, and we try to send some of our interesting code out there. You know, maybe slower than some people would like, but slower than I'd like, but it takes time, you know, to clean up code and get it out there. So right now we're concentrating on some of the smaller developer tools, like our Malix and that kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
I have to say, sometimes the IRC channels are really distracting.
Yes, they are.
They're talking about different drinks that they're having. You know, like somebody's drinking like Mickey's Big Mouth, and I'm like, my God.
They're talking about drinks to give to chicks.
Oh, that's good.
Here's a quote. Who's tongue-kissing Mickey Mouse besides me? It's like, wow. Yeah. I haven't thought about that in ever. Yeah, so. But, you know, IRC. How do you do? Yeah.
Well, the big news is you guys ported a native port of Google Earth, which is really fantastic. We really like it. I'm really liking it.
Yeah. No, we brought that out 2 weeks ago, I guess. What version of Linux are you running? Just out of curiosity.
My main workstation, I'm running SUSE 10.1, and I'm also running Ubuntu on my laptop here.
This should work fine.
I'm running it under Arch.
Under what?
Arch.
Like
Arch Linux?
Arch?
Yeah.
I haven't used that.
It's
working, though?
It's the Linux that you run if you're an evil person. Arch Linux.
Oh, evil Linux. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Arch.
No, it works. It works great. I mean, I really appreciate that you guys, you know, you put out an RPM, you put out an Ubuntu package, which also runs on the Debian derivatives, and also just the
that's actually a really, really hard thing about shipping Linux, you know, programs. I mean, it's hard to say, okay, this will work with these, you know, installations of Linux. It can be really tricky, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, as long as you can do like Debian and Slackware, who gives a shit about the rest anyway? Right?
Slackware, because you know Slackware has got the market share now.
That's right. That's right.
You know, I have to say, if you ever actually look at like desktop penetration of Linux, it's like appallingly bad. You know, so I'm like, wow, it works at all. Woo, you know.
Hey, you know what? You know why that is though? It's because the Slackware guys like me are thinking in themselves like, why do I even need to bother responding to this retarded questionnaire about what distribution? Of course I run Slackware. You know? Of course I do. I run Linux. Linux is Slackware. Slackware is Linux. Why would I, you know? I don't need to, you know, play with
exactly.
the script kiddies
and
tell them that I run, you know, what is it that you run there, Pat?
I run Debian, Ubuntu, SUSE.
SUSE, yeah, that's what it is. I don't run SUSE. And
for a while I was running Arch.
I'm a man. Arch. I run Slackware.
Arch is nice. It's like Slackware, but
it puts hair on your chest, doesn't it?
That's right.
Arch is nice. If you haven't checked it out, check it out, Chris. It's a lot like Slackware, but it actually has a really good package management system.
Except for don't use it and upgrade it because then it won't work.
I can't picture sampling distros anymore. It's like I got it all out of my system. And I mean, oh, look at me, youngins. You know, I'm beyond that or anything stupid like that. I just, the idea of reconfiguring my laptop drives me into shakes.
And that's exactly what
I got XGL working on a laptop. Okay. I'm really happy about it. I'm never touching it again.
What kind of laptop do you have?
It's the T41P. So it's a ThinkPad with the ATI built in. I'm using the stupid ATI proprietary driver so I can get XGL working, and it works.
Now, do you have that driver working in your ThinkPad, the one that you can smack it and have it?
Oh, no, I haven't done that stuff. Yet. I was thinking about that because it's got the sensor. It'd be really cool if you could bring that into X. To move the.
Oh well,
the
you gotta XGL you gotta drop a couple emails to Nat Friedman and stuff because they showed us this is way before. Right, wait. This is during the Boston conference. Yeah,
it was this year. Right?
It was the Boston conference this year? Way before they did anything like this with the new MacBooks that were out. Nat Friedman came over and he's showing us he's got F-Spot rigged up so that you smack it or you flip your laptop different ways and it
moves.
It writes the picture on your screen and stuff like that. If it's it sets it up right so that if it's landscape mode, it opens it up in landscape mode. So it would be really cool. And then he had a terminal that as you shook your ThinkPad around, the terminal wobbled around the screen like it was a marble on the screen.
Yeah, that's really neat.
And, eons before the MacBook stuff. So, Apple, bite me.
I don't have a problem with that,
Link. We were cool first.
I can't stand Apple either.
We were cool first. I know. I like mine.
They're nice machines.
Mac.
A nice piece of engineering.
I like my Mac.
I just don't like the company, personally.
The thing that pisses me off is, I keep, I bought a magazine, right?
Well, you better be careful because they're always recording Twit at the Apple store. And Chris probably has a life.
That's their problem.
I bought a magazine.
I don't Twit that often. You can go ahead. No, I'm kidding.
And I was a Mac addict or something like that. And I'm looking through it, and they have all these really cool programs and stuff you can use on your Mac. But it's from going to Linux back into that. It's that whole deal where everything is shareware again. Everybody wants to sell you something, and it always was a problem with me when I was using Windows way long time ago when I was stupid and young, and it just seems way now.
Last week. No, the thing that drives me crazy, actually, so I was thinking about iTunes the other day. Think, right? And it seems that, I haven't ever bought anything on iTunes. And the reason I haven't bought anything on iTunes is that, one, I'd have to run iTunes. But two, it strikes me that if you buy something on iTunes, you're kind of screwed if your computer goes dead, right? Because, all the stuff that's on your laptop, you can't re-download it. It's you don't own it, And so, you'd have to pay for it all over again. Is that right? I mean, re-download it once you buy it?
Yeah, you can re-download it, I think, 3 times.
Oh, okay.
But if you run Sharp Music, which is runs on Linux, you could just pull it right off of there, rip off the DRM, and do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, see, I thought most people actually did was they downloaded the stuff off of iTunes, and right from iTunes, you're supposed to be able to burn it to a CD or something
like
that.
Yeah, you can.
And then you can just...
Yeah, and then they transcode it, which is terrible.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I hate that whole idea of transcoding. it makes me want to, scream, So, yeah, I'd rather buy a CD or whatever.
Definitely.
There's this place out here, Resputin Music, and they have this, enormous, collection of used CDs for, $6 or whatever. So if I really want a CD, I'll just get it there,
There you go.
That's the way you do it. $6, and you get all the songs you want.
Yeah, exactly. Take that. I do. No. But it's they even have this $1
None
bin
of that
has
dollar-ass
really bad
shit
stuff,
thing,
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, what upsets me is you're not buying, the same quality, right? It seems that you're buying, these really cruddy 176 kilobit per second MP3 AAC things.
Right.
I can hear it,
Well,
it's why am I getting ripped off here,
You're not buying the music. You're buying the right... To listen to the music.
To listen to it.
Oh,
once.
Well, thank
unless
you so much.
The right to listen to it once unless you lose it.
You can get really, really, really high quality audio files for pennies if you go to all of MP3.
You don't want the ringtone going. And what I've seen people do, and this drives me up the flipping wall, they'll let it play so they can listen to their ringtone. And I'm just thinking of the person on the other end, right? And I'm thinking, whenever... I will never be friends with that guy, is what I always think. Because I can just picture me calling him and just thinking the whole time, he's listening to the Flippin' Buffy theme song. That's what he's doing.
Right? Or worse, you know, you're trying to call Dan and he's like letting the entire rendition of My Sharona play while he's sitting there in his, you know.
Well, come on, he pays
he's sitting there in his spandex 80s stretch pants, you know.
Okay, I don't know if that was a vision we want to share with people.
On to another topic, though. Chris.
Sorry, we got off topic.
You guys, when you released Picasa for Linux, it wasn't a native port. It was a Wine.
We used Wine. Absolutely. Proudly used Wine.
Well, why did you guys do that?
It was the right decision for Wine. So what people have to decide is if they need a native port so badly that they're willing to wait 2 years for it. Right? So when we bought Picasa, this is a program that uses the Windows stuff like crazy to make it do what it does really fast, right? And so we chose to go the Wine way because we were able to make changes to Wine fairly quickly and get the app out there, right? And we think it's actually a very good user experience, and that's sort of what matters in the end to us. So Dan Kegel, who's a Wine guy and a Googler, you know, worked with Code Weavers to make Wine good enough to run Picasa. Right, and in the process, you know, we put in like 250 patches in the Wine. So, I'm really actually quite proud of that because we released a lot of code. We made it possible for more programs to run under Linux than I've ever run before, and we made it possible for Picasa to run that way. Right, so I think that Linux users have to become okay with Wine because it'll open up a whole new, an enormous user base to the Linux desktop.
See, now that's what I thought,
if people
too.
If are serious about the Linux desktop, they got to embrace Wine.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought, too. But you know what?
I'm really happy that Google Earth was native because I think it was a great experience for Google Earth. But for Wine, to be against Wine, I think is ridiculous.
Yeah. You guys got a really bad rap, I think, off of releasing...
So you have to measure what.
Wine.
I think there were some people who are upset on Slashdot. I don't say that in a bad way because I love Slashdot, right? Because some people are like, "Oh, Slashdot's that." You know, I'm not one of those people, right? And I think that it's valid for people to say, "Well, this isn't a port," and it's like, again, we didn't say it was, you know. But it's one of those things where it's like the number of downloads makes me think it's been very, very popular.
Yeah,
right?
It's something.
So that's what
working,
matters
right?
to me. Right, so people like Picasa. They downloaded it, they tried it out, and some of them kept on using it. So that's how I measure success of something, right? I think a more valid criticism. If you want to criticize it, say, well, why isn't this open source? Right, so that's a valid criticism, you know.
And why isn't it open source?
Because we haven't had time to audit the code, and there's all kinds of other problems around open source and something that you didn't write in the first place. So, there's a lot of things you need to look after.
But, now, is that the same?
I think that's possible in the future.
Is that the same for Google Earth as to why that's not open source?
No, that's a whole different reason. So we see Google Earth as being a lot like a view into a database,
uh-huh.
right? And I think that there are people who are still uncomfortable with opening up that database to the outside world in a programmatic fashion because our deal – so you have to realize that in a lot of ways, Google Earth is a very thin layer between – our Maps database and the user, right? And the Maps database is all licensed from other people, right? So in a lot of ways, you can never make an open source mapping application because the imagery, if it's going to be of any quality, always belongs to somebody else. So I have to admit, it's not high on my list of things to open source because in the end, people can't use it like that, you know? So it's like I go back and forth on this, you know? It's like I wish it was, I have somebody on my team who I have working with that group, but I'm not going to commit to anything along those lines because the imagery in the end cannot belong to the public. So, I mean, because the publicly available free imagery is kind of cruddy. So, I mean, I know how much we pay for our imagery, and it's an appallingly high number. So, but it's great imagery, you know. So,
oh, it is.
What do you do?
It's beautiful.
Now, what about the rest of the programs you guys got going on at Google over there? You know, like, there's some of the things that I'm really excited about.
Well, we released
about
some stuff, like,
stuff,
for
right?
Firefox. Oh, yeah, you mean, like, the online web stuff?
Yeah.
Sketch.
Yeah, that's where it's at.
Oh, Sketch.
I'm real excited about it. Every time something new comes out, I got to go right in and try it, you know, and I get the little, you know, the little invites, and we send them to everybody and check the stuff out. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, the spreadsheets is pretty neat. It's a neat way to do that, you know. It's... it's all very new. Sometimes I'm like amazed at how fast we release stuff. It's like, wow, there's another thing. Wow, there's another thing, you know? I feel like I'm constantly behind, you know?
What's next?
Sketch.
Come on, give us the inside and something real.
Here's the thing. People like that. Oh, what's next? What's next? And what I like to do, actually, and I won't do this to you guys, but sometimes what I'll do is do you know about, you know, Google SMS? And I'm like, oh, what's that? Well, so you can send all kinds of things to SMS and all the rest of that. And they say, oh, that's coming out. It's like, actually, no, it came out like, you know, 4 months ago and nobody noticed it. so, you know, I think that Google has a richness of applications that have not been sampled by the average user. So, I'd like to pick a couple and tell you about them. No, I'm kidding.
Hook us up, man.
The thing is, it's, you know, the things are going to come out when they come out. I think it's really important not to pre-announce things. I think it's really obnoxious when people pre-announce things that don't exist.
Yes, but this show is already really obnoxious, so go right ahead. You know, it's okay,
nope,
really.
Not going to do it.
We love vaporware.
Vaporware. You know what I'm really looking for?
Well, that was my last company.
You know what I'm really looking for? And you can like tell me or not tell me if you're going to do this, but you really should. Is you guys really should do some kind of a whiteboard product.
Like a conference sharing thing. That would be totally cool.
That's something that I really, really could use.
I think that if we did that, it would be best to go over like Google Talk or something.
Yes.
You know?
It could be.
Perfect thing for Google Talk and make it come out on Linux first.
Yeah, that's right. Come on.
Is there already a Jabber enhancement process document around whiteboard sharing?
There is a whiteboard built into Inkscape that uses a Jabber server.
Okay.
But
that's cool. I love Inkscape. It's awesome.
It is. It's really neat. But
that's something.
It's not easy to use.
It's not as friendly as I think Google could make it.
Yeah. Google could do it and make it work.
Because we're magic.
Yeah.
We're magic.
But you know what I want even more than that? I want Google. I want an experts exchange filter for my Google search engine.
Right. What are you talking about?
You ever heard of
experts? I remember experts. I totally remember experts exchange because that was bought by Andover.net and then shut down. Okay.
No, it still pops up.
I'm thinking question exchange. I'm thinking question exchange.
Expert. Every time I
ask know exactly
a question,
what you're talking about. Yeah. And that thing drives me crazy.
Join the club.
There needs to be a little filter right on the top underneath the Google header, you know? Filter out experts exchange. You can just click that and
you won't see it again.
Not have to do it anymore.
Yeah. The Google thing about expert exchange appalling is if you can look past the ads, there's actually some really good answers now and then.
Yeah, if you pay for
it. It's one of these classic problems in search. No. You can also, there's a lot of free answers there too. So it's one of those really hard problems for search engines, right? Sometimes experts exchange kind of pisses me off, but I'm not in web spam. I'm in the open source group, so I don't worry about that as much. We have very smart people in those groups.
Now, I mean, I don't want to say experts exchange is doing anything wrong, but I mean, when I do a search, when I do a search, invariably, they're in like the one of the top, you know, if they're not first, they're within the top three, and I'm amazed that they're able to get that high of a ranking in Google
every time,
or it must be what I'm searching on then or something.
So fess up, Chris, what you're doing really over there is you're wearing an Experts Exchange T-shirt right now, right? Is that what's going on?
Yes, because I have a computer industry T-shirt.
And
to
he's
wear.
Got an Experts Exchange keychain and an Experts Exchange, you know, squishy stress.
He's like
ball.
Ted Knife from Too Close to Comfort, except he's got techie T-shirts.
So, of course, you know, since we're talking about it, I have to go to their website and see if there's actually anything changed. Yeah. So here's one of the pathetic things about Experts Exchange. So when you go there and you look at the question, which is embedded in the middle of all this advertising,
right?
Then you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Sometimes there's an answer.
I have answer.
So just go. Just go to Experts Exchange. Okay. Here we go. I know it's kind of lame, but if you pick one of the ones at the bottom of the page here, time tested site wide solutions, current hot site wide solutions, that kind of thing. You know, just click on one. All right. Now I'm not defending Expert Exchange here at all. I'm defending Google. but if you scroll all the way down, so you're at the top, you have all the ads, then the question, then more ads, and then a whole link thing of ads, then there's ads on the right, and ads on the left, ads on the right. And then at the bottom often will be the answer. now not in the one I'm in right now, but, you know, anyway, so.
It's of course not.
I mean, sometimes I've seen an answer on there, but more often I have seen the, you know, join and pay $10 and we'll give you the answer.
Yeah.
Which, you know what, more power to him for making a buck. You know, that's great.
But you know what?
But it's just frustrating when everything I search on ends up going
there. Here's what I want to know about that, though, right? I want to find somebody who actually pays their crap, and I want to hear from them to find out whether they actually have the answer all the time. Because they have every damn question I have ever typed in.
That's
Experts Exchange has the answer.
That's where Google
gets
its tech support.
I want to know if they actually has the answer for it, though.
That's where Google gets its tech support from. Come on.
I know the answer I think the official defense of Expert Exchange is we wouldn't be linking you to it if they didn't have a certain amount of answers, uh-huh. right? Because the magic brain of Google knows, right?
Sure.
But I honestly don't know. I'd have to look into it.
The magic brain of Google has to check and make a new robots text file for that site, I'll tell you.
Oh, they have pop-ups too? I hate pop-ups. Ooh. I'm using Firefox with something on the IRC channel is... Bad word, bad word, bad word, bad word. Pop-ups, bad word, bad word. Yes, so there you go. Bad word, bad word. Word Wrangler is used. So
what is everybody running at Google on their desktop or laptops?
We've all got Amiga. And,
right, yeah.
It's very so engineers universally almost all use Linux unless they're creating Windows apps.
Awesome.
We have these big, beautiful monitors, too. We've got these two Dell 24-inch things, and I use mine sort of on their side, so it's like this big square.
Flat panel LCDs?
Yeah, we're totally spoiled. It's great.
Do you guys have a site somewhere where we can, see pictures of your hardware? I'm into, hardware porn, so, you know.
You know, I think that there's... Okay, that was a bit too much information. I think there are pictures of people online, but I don't know where to find them offhand. Yeah, so my screen dimensions are 2400 by 1920 pixels. But just big enough. That's both of them side by side. Right, so. It's really awesome.
I like it.
What's great is Google Earth on this is absurd. It's
we have tech envy.
Well, you know.
It's like being in an IMAX theater.
We need pictures of this kind of stuff, because we show this to our wives and we say, look what he has. This is what I want for Christmas, right?
I need this to be productive,
yes,
dear.
Yes,
don't you want me to be
as
productive as a Google engineer?
You want me to get rid of one of these old computers laying around? And I need to have more screen real estate.
That's the real answer, though, is it's three screens so you don't have the seam in the middle of Nebraska.
There right? you go. Yeah.
So if we want to go work for Google, do we have to move to California?
No, we have offices actually in engineering offices in the United States, in New York, Seattle, California, of course, three different locations. We have a super teeny one in Atlanta, and there's a couple of others, that are opening all the time.
Nothing in Pennsylvania.
We have them in Tokyo, Zurich.
You take telecommuters?
We're not really big on the telecommuting thing. We like to keep the teams together. Some groups are more telecommunity than others.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It's hard to ship the meals over
the
internet.
Exactly. How about if I were to open up and manage the Pennsylvania branch?
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's the Eastern Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania branch of the Google offices.
I have to share with you that actually doesn't exist. Pennsylvania, it's not real.
You only say that because you don't live
here. You've never been here.
You can't find it on Google Earth.
That's
but one day it will be there.
You come to visit, you'll know.
Tell me how it's spelled, okay? Pennsylvania.
You can find Cthulhu on Google Earth, can't you?
It's spelled L-E-H-I-G-H space Valley.
Valley, that's right.
Lehigh Valley. Okay, that's right. Lehigh, PA? PA, I guess?
Lehigh Valley, PA. Yeah. I wonder if that's even searchable.
Well, it's three, four different cities.
It's gone. It's flying. Is that where you guys are right now? Because I could,
we're in Bethlehem.
Down your house.
Yeah, you want the exact address? I'll drop my docs. It's not that hard.
He's moving in a little while.
I'll be gone.
I'm going to retask stuff like you guys. Yeah. I think the bandwidth gods just heard you and made you drop out.
Yeah.
So what's
looking down on your fine town.
You're probably looking at the wrong town.
Bethlehem.
You're looking at Bethlehem. Oh, I thought you might be looking at Allentown.
He's looking at Bethlehem.
Durham Street, Bethlehem, East Union Boulevard, East Garrison Street. Does this sound right to you? I see this big old stadium.
We actually have
I'm a little
We actually have a Girard over in Allentown. They put a bunch of the chips in the some of the apples these days.
A little to the northwest of where you're looking.
Okay. Just go. You probably don't want to give your address to everybody in IRC.
You know what? Just go to 43 West Greenwich Street.
There you go.
I mean, you know what? If you do a Who Is On My Domain, you're going to find my address on there.
That's
anyhow.
True.
So, you know, it's not like it's a big secret.
Well, it depends on which domain he does the Who Is On. If he does it on the linuxlink.net or tlls.org.
43. West.
Oh, wow. I'm looking right down on your house.
That's it. That's where you drop the bomb right now.
Take us out.
Google's new service.
Oh, we have those kinds of satellites, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we hear a lot of talk these days about net neutrality. And
yes.
What's your slant on that? I mean, do you think that it's, you know, something to be concerned about? Or do you think it's, you know, just the market, you know, adjusting itself to the new technology?
I think it's something to be concerned about, and let me tell you why. So suppose there are people out there who don't want Apache to be popular or don't want the Free Software Foundation to be popular because maybe they have competing products. And suppose they go into those markets and they say, I'd be willing to pay for a better connection away from these people when they search for these terms or when they do this. Would that be legit? Would you appreciate that?
Not one bit.
So some people would say, oh, it's just the market economy. Well, you know, so is slavery, you know. I mean, not that I'm equating the two by any measure. But, you know, it's like I think that neutrality is important. I think that it's important enough that I think that we do need to codify it with legislation because otherwise I think it will hurt free software. I think it will hurt open source a lot. And like, even silly things like this podcast, I mean, not that it's silly and we'll waste our time or anything like that, but I mean, even things like podcasts and just websites, you know, your average everyday website. Imagine if you don't pay that extra bit of VIG, well, you know, you can get in the back of the line. And it's like, you know, yeah, so there's always been some component of the, you know, the rich get a better connection kind of thing in the world. But at some point, you have to ask yourself why things like the internet work at all. Right. It's because everyone gets served.
It's right? Magic. According to Ted Stevens, it's a bunch of tubes.
The rich are going to get better connections anyway because they can afford a fatter pipe to the net.
Isn't it scary?
Well, I guess the real thing is should people be able to pay to keep you from seeing a website? Because that's where this is going.
Right.
Right. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's going to happen. So if that's okay with you, if it's okay for other people to pay to keep you away from information, then fine. You know, that's the world that it'll be if we don't actually make it.
You know, it's just this freaking crooked politicians trying to get another Hawaiian vacation.
Exactly, man. Being paid off by the telecommunication lobbyists.
Well, you know, I'm not going to postulate on the quality of the politician, right? Because there are some good ones.
I can.
I will. There's some bitches. There you go.
They're a bunch of thieves, man. You know, it's like
there are people like this. Absolutely.
There are. They're called congressmen.
I would respect the idiot more if he was honest and said, "I'm being paid off by a telecommunications lobbyist to say this, and that's why I'm voting on this."
At least then that would be.
I would respect him at least for being honest.
Some amount of truthfulness going on here.
Well, I mean, so here's the ultimate defense of special interest groups, right? Special interests represent people, right? And people
sure
who are willing
don't.
To. Well, you know, I think it's just one of those areas. It's like, I think that legislation is warranted in this case because of the behavior of some of the telcos. They've said very explicitly that they're willing to charge extra for preferable treatment on the internet, and the opposite is also going to be true. So if that's the case, I think that that's pretty, I think that's dirty pool, frankly. And
I think it's
worthy of legislation. And I'm not really a big fan of overly regulating anything, right? Like the internet, right? Because I think it'll hurt it. But I think that the pain of having a regulatory infrastructure to monitor such things is less than the pain of the actual thing that it's trying to prevent.
But how are we going to be able... How is a telco going to be able to afford the infrastructure and the upgrades if they don't do a model like that?
Well, you know, they do have the power of eminent domain, and they are charging people for the pipe in and the pipe out already. I think that they have plenty of options.
It's not enough.
No, the tube in and
tube out.
The tube in and tube out, yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing is, how about this? How about this? I'll make a deal, all right? If they give all of us the power of eminent domain, then we'll go ahead and we'll pay extra. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, we gave you that land. We gave you the ability to basically bulldoze houses to do this, you know, and whether it's, you know, railway space that turned into telco space, or if it was the power to basically go around and gouge up roads forever, you know, we gave that to them. And in return, we got things like rural electrification and rural telephone lines that were all required as part of this, right? Basically a fair marketplace. So they couldn't charge people who live kind of in the sticks, you know, by the inch for the wiring, you know, and in return, and remember, they got something in return for this. In return, they got the power to have a monopoly, right? And in this country, a monopoly is a very, very powerful thing. And, you know, it's funny because here in the Valley, in Silicon Valley, if you want to get DSL, you have a couple of choices, right? You can get SBC Yahoo. And this is not a slam against Yahoo or SBC, but this is how it works here, right? You can get SBC Yahoo and you can get it really, really fast. Or you can get it from someone like Speakeasy who gives you a great connection. But it's going to take a while. And the reason it's going to take a while is because if you're going to be doing a DSL connection through somebody else's connectivity, like, say, Speakeasy's, well, then you have to wait for them to disconnect the Yahoo infrastructure and make it possible for them to send in their text from COVAD to attach to theirs, right? So it takes, on average, a month to 2 months longer to get a DSL line if a SBC Yahoo DSL line has been on that line before, right? So it's one of those things. They have all these little ways that they control things. And it's like, guys, you know, at some point, you have to play fair. And I'm not asking for anything special. I just want a little bit of fairness in the world. And in fact, all I'm really asking is that we take the worst of the dirty pool out of the system, right? Because it's unfair. And in return for all that eminent domain and all that monopoly, they're supposed to act somewhat in the public interest, right? And public interest is this thing that's completely gone off the map, you know, in this country, which is a real shame. But whatever, right? I don't want to get too political.
Rant away, man. We don't care.
yeah, because none of us here are opinionated at all on the subject, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it's like, you know, people say, oh, well, we can't afford to upgrade our infrastructure. Okay, well, then don't do it. You know? Yeah. I'm not requiring SBC upgrade their infrastructure. And if they want to upgrade it, and if their customers demand it, well, they can say to those customers, well, pay more, right? Pay more across the board to upgrade these things. Not pay more, oh, and you can't get to pick your favorite website. Can't get to the Linux link anymore. Sorry. They didn't pay extra.
You know what really sucks about that, though, is, you know, you got the people who can't. They have no choice. It's not that they can pay more. They won't let them pay more, and they won't let them have somebody else come in and do it either.
We don't have the opportunity to take over that line, right? We just don't. And when we do, that they put all these things in the way. And I don't want it. I'm getting upset now. I'm just gonna be mellow. I'm cool. Let's talk about fun things.
So what do you think about Linux on the desktop?
I think it's actually pretty great now. I have to tell you this. A lot of people spend a lot of time saying, oh, it's really hard to install and not very intuitive, blah, blah, blah. I disagree. I fundamentally disagree with people when they say that, because if you have to install an operating system, it sucks universally. And Linux kind of sucks less now. And as far as the desktop experience, it is no worse than anything out there right now. And it's better in a lot of ways, in my opinion, because it's consistent. It works consistently, or it doesn't work consistently from reboot to reboot.
Good point.
And honestly, so much of the world for me is through my web browser. So I have four windows up on my X Windows. I've got this really massive Firefox with a whack of tabs, right? I've got my corporate calendar, which is Oracle Corporate Time, on the right-hand side here. And then on the bottom, I've got the IRC. And then on the bottom right, I've got XMMS. And that's it. Sometimes I have IM running, you know? And this is a pretty terrific desktop for that. And it's mostly because of how great Firefox is, frankly. You know, and I've got that if I run Windows, too. So, anyway. So I think the Linux desktop is well poised to do whatever it wants to do now.
Now, I heard someone mention a rumor that...
You're going to have to say that again. You were all, like, sort of dropout-y.
Because I dropped myself out.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard that somebody... somewhere along the line in the past couple of weeks... I heard somebody had mentioned that there was a rumor out there that Google was seeing more connections from Linux machines as opposed to OS X machines. Is there any, is that valid at all, or is that to your knowledge?
As far as I know, that is not valid. I wouldn't know. I have old stats for like browser and operating systems that visit like, you know, code, but code is a very poor sample.
Right.
Codeku.com is the site that I run. So yeah, I don't know. Okay. I would not expect that to be true. The Linux penetration is pretty pathetic in places like Asia, frankly. And we have a lot of work to do there. So.
Well, what about,
I think it could happen.
Okay. What's your feeling? I mean, Linux technically surmounts a lot of hurdles, and it's the desktop, and I agree with you about the desktop. I think it's, you know, sans installation, which is a pain on any regard, any operating system to work with. I mean, I think if somebody's given a Linux desktop or an OS X or a Windows, I don't think they're going to have a bad experience on any one of those, you know, particularly the Linux one either. But we have legal issues that are hard to surmount, like video codecs.
Yeah, it's appallingly bad.
Yep.
DRM issues coming down the pike. You know, there's some people we've spoken with that say, you know, in a couple of years, it's not going to be a problem. you know, Stephen Von Nichols thinks it won't be a problem in a couple, by what, the end of this year?
I think so, yeah, by the end
and,
of this year.
And Mark Shuttleworth. Codecs? Yeah, on codecs. Mark Shuttleworth thinks, you know, his opinion is, as the markets go, you know, start looking around and seeing that they could reach more people with their products through open,
free choices,
open standards, open choice.
Route.
Things
are
going
to roll
route.
Right over to Linux, and I don't know if I buy all that.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be like Linux, but moving towards, you know, something like Theora,
sure,
and Aug, that type of thing. I mean, do you foresee that in the future, or do you think it's still going to be a lockdown?
I think it's still going to be a lockdown. I think that Linux users are going to get used to downloading codecs that are fundamentally not free software. And I think that they're going to keep doing it. And they're going to download things like MPlayer, which just conveniently will use codecs from other operating systems. And I think that that's what people are going to get used to. I don't think that the world is going to change over to Theora because of quality issues. I think that they will change over to Aug, but it'll take so long because people aren't pirating an Aug. They're pirating an MP3. So I think so long as that's true, there will be no real desire for Aug to work on things like the iPod. Right. And if you remember, iPod supports MP3 and AAC. It doesn't support AUG. And I think that's pretty important. So it's a pretty important player.
I bought an iAudio that supports AUG. And the iRivers.
iAudio?
Yeah, iAudio. It's a Korean company. And the iRivers, too, support AUG, don't they?
To a limited extent, yeah.
Yeah, the iRiver. There's another brand. They made that little cube thing that plays AUG. Yeah, frankly, if you don't have market share, you support AUG because you want more market share, right?
Sure.
So I know that's a very depressing way of
saying, you don't have to pay.
But it's, yeah, you know, it's easy. There's already code out there. You just download it, add it, and you're done. Hey, these are kind of cute, these iAudio things. Oh, I saw one of these at Fry's. Yeah, these
yeah, they're cheap. Works great.
Are they cheap? Yeah.
Yeah, less than $100.
Korea, man. Yeah, these are really cute. The website's really painful to look at with all this flashy stuff, but whatever. I am a pessimist about this because so much stuff is written in either DRM wrapped or proprietary codec wrapped stuff. So it's either going to be MP3, it's going to be DivX, it's going to be these kinds of things because it's you're sort of fighting against this enormous like collection of already created stuff. So. And it seems sort of cynical to say once people start pirating in something, I know it's popular, but it's kind of true.
Uh-huh.
Right? People aren't ripping to Theora, they're ripping to DivX. Because Theora's quality isn't there. If Aug could get the On2 guys to release a version of VP9 or VP7 in open source, we'd be in a much better place with video. But they're going to have a hard time doing that. They're stuck with VP3, right? So.
Right. So then do you think we'll start seeing legal versions?
Yeah, so the other question is, will people go out there and pay for the MP3 licenses and the DivX licenses and stuff, or will they have downloadable versions? I think that that's more likely. I think that what will happen in a couple of years is if we get enough penetration of the Linux desktop into people's lives, then there will be things you can download legitimately that will play these things. So a lot of people are sort of abdicating that role and just using Flash players. I mean, that's what we're doing on Google Video. you know, while we wait for everything else to shake out. But yeah, it's what it's going to come down to is, you know, right now Windows Media Player and iTunes are fighting, you know, tooth and nail over this thing. And everyone else is just sitting there just watching them beat each other up. And it's something, you know, it is really something. So, and the thing is, people don't realize is how much, DRM there is, even in just, you know, pedestrian things like DVDs and the new HD DVD standards and who's writing all these standards and how bad they are. And it's one of those things where you just have to be okay with it if you want to watch a movie under Linux. So, there you go.
That stinks.
I don't know if I made a lot of sense.
Dum-dum-dum-dum.
No. Yeah, DRM and codecs are really, really hard. So.
Now, is that someplace that, you know, Google might get involved in some way down the future of video? And, well, you already are in video.
Yeah, we have Google Video, you know, and that uses a Flash player, like I said, because we figured it was the best user experience in the end, you know. And I think that was the right choice.
And, you know, are you guys going to go maybe open up your own Google Music store?
That would be cool.
Yeah, I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. So.
Well, yeah, he wouldn't tell us if they were anyhow.
Google Music, a penny a download. A penny a song.
If there was anyways, I wouldn't tell you, but I honestly don't know. One of the things about Google that's really, really, really great is that I work with a lot of smart people, so I feel no need to look over people's shoulders. It's like this amazing, freeing action, you know?
Cool.
So. This is one of the great things about having high standards for hiring is, yeah, you'll miss some really great people in the hiring process, which stinks. But on the other side, you know, a great majority of the people you end up hiring, it's just like, oh, they're doing that job.
Well, no, just keep in mind, it still would be really, really great to, you know, log into my Google Mail account, you know, in a couple weeks down the road and have that little try our new Google whiteboard announcement
that would be cool.
Hanging out there for me. I'm really looking forward to that, man. And I know you're not going to tell me that you got it in the works now, but I'm
working on
it, you know.
Here's the other great thing about 20% projects. I'm sure, I don't know if you guys have heard about 20% projects here.
No.
Basically, every engineer can spend a day a week working on something else, whatever.
That's cool, man.
And, yeah, it's insane. And it's insanely great. And the funny thing about it, though, is that because of it, I could be working on, like, a moon goat teleporter, and no one would be the wiser for it. So you could say, so, Chris, is Google working on a digital gold-plated escargot fork? And I'd have to say, well, maybe. You know? I mean, realistically, probably not. But, you know, who knows,
you
right?
You never know, yeah.
Well, Microsoft is definitely scared of Google these days. They're looking over their shoulder, and I think they see Google more as a threat than Linux in general as a threat.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, Microsoft's a funny company. I think they should concentrate on Vista, don't you? I mean, geez.
That might be a good idea.
You mean Windows 2024? Is that the Vista we're talking about?
Service Pack 3?
So there's an old story here in the Valley, chillins. There's an old story, basically. If you're always looking at your rearview mirror, eventually you're going to run into a wall, right? Yeah. And so one of the things I tell my employees and during my orientations that I give here is that, listen, so, you know, we have enough people worrying about Microsoft. We have people who worry about the strategic issues. Just worry about your end user. As long as they're okay, we're going to be okay. Right, as long as the users continue to like us and like using our stuff, we're going to be fine. Right, so I think that maybe other companies should do that sort of thinking as well. You know, it's like, you know, I'm very passionate about like this whole like Wine versus native port thing because I think in the end it makes Linux better. Right, for both these things to be healthy. Right, and I think about that because I think about what people want to run on their computers. Right. And not so much to the issues, and frankly, the sometimes religious issues around Wine versus native porting, right? But it's like, I can get all wrapped up in some competitive thing with Microsoft, or I can just worry about, you know, what makes things better for the Google user? And in my case, what makes open source better? Because that's sort of what I'm tasked with, right?
Whiteboards.
So. Yeah, maybe.
Experts exchange filters.
That's right.
So that's Google's focus there. What makes the end user experience better?
Exchange filters?
Experts.
Well, yeah, I mean, and what other focus should we have? I mean, for gosh sakes, you know? I mean, people spend so much time going on and on about power and about control and all this other stuff. It's like, you know, if you just do what your users want and you're right, then they'll stick with you. So simple.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Because so we want, simple. You know, as users, we want new stuff. And innovative stuff.
Well, actually, you do sometimes, and right? Sometimes you want reliable. Sometimes you want really great results, right?
Sure.
And, you know, it's like, think about...
Well, if you get new and innovative stuff, you expect it to work, you know?
Right, right.
Or you're not talking like Microsoft here, right?
On working better. No, I'm just talking about Google, you know? I mean, whatever, Microsoft, right? I mean, I play Half-Life 2 on Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. So I use it, right? But it's like, you know, the rest of my life is online, you know? So... I mean, it's like, again, looking at my desktop, what matters? My calendar matters. So I'm using Oracle Calendar for that. A lot of people use Exchange for that.
You're not using Google Calendar?
No, we don't. Our internal one doesn't map right to the meeting room. So we were running it internally for a long time. I use Google Calendar with my wife and my kid and stuff. It's not really scaled for enterprise use yet. And that's okay. It's scaled for our users' use, right?
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, that's what matters, right? Our users. And sometimes that maps really well internally. So, like, we have an internal version of Gmail that we use. We have internal versions of Google Talk, right, both inside our internal version of Gmail as well as clients, right? So we're always doing this stuff first, right? And we were running Google Calendar internally for a very long time to get the bugs out. And those are some of our strongest releases, you'll notice. But, you know, yeah, sometimes it doesn't map well to the enterprise. And you have to make a decision as a company, okay, who are you going to serve? Are you going to serve the consumer? Are you going to concern yourself with the enterprise? And we have a group that does enterprise stuff, but that wasn't really what Calendar was for. So, anyway.
Well, Chris, keep those Linux apps coming.
Yes, sir.
We'll keep trying them out and recommend them to everybody.
Keep the Linux apps coming. Keep the web apps coming. Always excited to see something new roll out, no matter how much bad press you guys get for playing with wine. I like him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? It's okay to have these discussions. I mean, I don't want to shut this kind of thing. Like this guy, Lord Darkon, was that his name on the channel?
Or Dragon Booth?
Something like that.
So, you know, he was like, oh, you guys suck for doing wine. It's like, well, I disagree with that. But it's okay for people to feel that way. I mean,
sure.
People are very passionate about operating systems. They're very passionate about technology, right? And that's okay. These are our people, right? You know, it's... You know, people are freaky about this stuff.
You have to pick your battles too. And as far as I'm concerned, as long as it's Linux, I'm all right with that. You know, so
yeah. See, I'm with you. I mean, as long as Linux just keeps on getting better. And you know, the great thing about Google Earth and Picasa is I can run them under Linux. You know, it's like it was really hard to demo Google Earth at conferences and the rest because it only ran under Windows, and I didn't want to demo on Windows. I wanted
to
demo
you.
On Linux.
Yeah.
Stupid open source programs, man.
Tell that to your Slashdot buddies. We were at the .org pavilion, and we saw your buddies from Slashdot.
I love the Mac.
And they were running more Macs and running, you know, Microsoft Office.
XP, yeah.
So they would say to you, but it works well. It runs BSD.
And then they were playing Xbox on the last day of the conference. What's up with that, man?
Well, you know what those guys mostly do is they play World of Warcraft when they're not working. So, I mean, they're huge into games, you know, so. But yeah.
To each his own, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. At the end, I love computers. I mean, if all I could use would be a Mac or a Windows box, I would because I love them. I've always loved them ever since I was a kid, you know. So, I'm really happy Linux is around. I really like using it. But, you know, if all I had was that old HP 48 calculator, I'd be using that and programming that. So,
Commodore 64.
Yeah, baby.
Bring
Vic 20.
Bring them back. Yep.
Yeah, the Commodore 64 was a great computer. And do you know why?
It still is. I have one.
All the memory maps. So you knew what you would poke or peek to get to. Yeah, that was a great computer.
TI-99 4A.
Let's not go too far. Right?
Yeah, no,
that was Amiga. That was just wussy altogether there, Dave.
Amiga was a great machine back in the day.
Yeah, no, it was. I used to play Blood Money on it, you know, and the Killing Game
Show. TIs with them Psychosis
games. Where you could use, like, the first level and nothing else because it was so darn hard. You know? So I'm going to probably go to dinner. Anything else?
That's it.
No, well, we appreciate you coming on, Chris. Keep up the good work.
Thanks for coming on,
it's really
man.
Good having you on. I hope that sometime you consider coming back on.
Thanks for dealing with my scheduling weirdness, guys.
No problem.
I really appreciate you dealing with my scheduling craziness, you know. So.
When's the new Floss Weekly coming out? This week?
Well, we're recording one tomorrow with Randall. We already have one in the can with Jeremy Allison that we really need to get up, you know. And so that's really got to go up soon. It's a good one, too, the one with Jeremy. Because the thing about Jeremy is he's dealt with specs in a way that nobody has ever done before. It sounds really boring, but it's really great.
Yeah, we've talked really to Jeremy. He's a hoot.
Yeah, he's hilarious. Have you guys had him on your show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Well,
we got to get the Postal 2 guy on our show.
They had him on this last episode.
I know.
The guy who ported all the apps over, man. We got to talk to him. What's his name,
Brian?
Yeah,
you got to talk to Ryan.
Brian.
And with you guys, he can totally cut loose in ways he couldn't really unfloss.
Yes.
Trying to be a little polite on our show. You know? But yeah. No, it was really good talking to you, but I'm going to motor. So.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Chris.
I appreciate it. And hopefully we'll touch base with you in the future.
Keep using Linux, everybody.
Definitely.
Have a good one.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. I'll see you.
Bye.
And there
and
we
was Chris.
That was Chris.
Chris is a cool guy, man.
Yes.
I'm still on the line. We should wait until.
Oh, okay.
No, we'll keep praising anyway.
Okay, here I go. I'm hitting the big red button.
Okay.
Boop.
Good I was going to say, he didn't. If he cut off, man, it's still going.
That's okay.
I found out if I. You know what? It's weird. With Skype, if I hit the X up here, it doesn't close out properly. But if I hit close, not a problem.
Uh-huh.
And now watch, as I'm the recording of the interview and everything, if I hit file close on Audacity, mm-hmm. it'll just close, and we'll lose everything.
I wouldn't do that then. You know,
probably not a good idea, Dan.
Especially since I don't have a backup going right
now. No, not good. Not a good thing.
Because I'm an idiot, didn't learn from my mistakes the other three times it crashed.
Excuse me, cheaper.
So how does my microphone sound? Do I sound like
your microphone? I was going to remark about that. I think you sound fantastic this time.
Thank you.
He sounds
nice and clear.
Good. I almost wish that I was doing the show remotely from home again, just so that I could hear what you sound like from there. But from here, you sound really good this time.
$89. It's a Samson Q7.
So maybe that was the ticket for you, man. You just need to get a mic.
For a split second, I was actually considering buying one of those really expensive mics that Leo Laporte uses.
Uh-huh.
It goes for like $260. I'm like, you know, man, is the $99 mic going to sound, you know, that much worse than the $265 mic?
Well, I tell you what, you sound good today. I don't know what. I'd like to get some feedback from some of the people on the IRC. I don't know what they think, but I think. I think you sound pretty good.
You sound good. Link smells good. That means I either feel, taste, or I don't know what's left.
I'm gonna rub Dan's hairy knees over here.
Just point it in the other direction, Dan. Please.
Smell good. No, Link smells good.
Yeah.
So,
sweetie pie, where are you going after the show?
I'm gonna go home.
Let's go to the Blue Oyster Club.
Have my wife crack my back for me, baby.
The blue
you
oyster.
You got crap on your back.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, man.
You know,
where the hell is Alan?
He's got the head, man.
I don't know.
I didn't see it. What? I didn't get an email. Did you guys get an email?
No,
I didn't get an email.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Nothing at all. I wonder if he's all right. That would suck.
Maybe he drowned.
We're in here cracking jokes about him. He's freaking, you know, broke his leg or some shit, right?
That would suck.
Broke his leg trying to play, you know, four-handed twister with Tim McGraw.
So I went to the SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop Roadshow last Thursday, actually, and it was down in King of Prussia, PA. I went down there, man. The traffic was atrocious, but I got in there. It was about 9:15, and they weren't actually starting until 9:30, so that was a good thing. They had breakfast and everything for everybody. It was really nice. The room was packed full of people, man. It must have been about 60 people there, and it was really full. And they had Roger Levy, who's one of the big executives over there, come on, give like a little 10-15-minute intro. And then they had the different guys come on to do demonstrations of SLED 10, Zen, and a couple other things. And it was pretty cool, man. And then in the afternoon, they fed us lunch. And then
what'd they feed you?
It was like sandwiches and salads and stuff and cookies, you know, typical corporate, you know, break room lunch type stuff. It was fine. It was cool. Then in the afternoon, they did an install fest for anybody who was willing to participate. And there was actually quite a few people that stuck around to do the install fest. And
you didn't though, right?
No.
You're too happy with
Ubuntu. Not so much. I'm happy with Ubuntu, but I have some work-related stuff on my laptop that I have on here. So I really can't blow it away right now. But it looks real nice, man. They had a customized version of GNOME. If you look at Ted Hager's blog, or you go to the Novell website, he has a bunch of videos where you can see Ted demonstrating a whole bunch of different apps and, you know, how the screenshots and, you know, doing DXGL on the desktop. You can download some videos there. And it's really nice, man. It's really impressive. What they've done, what I noticed the big difference is, they've basically taken what they did with SUSE 10.1, and they built on top of that, made it more slick, more easier. Like, for instance, the XGL stuff on SUSE 10.1, you basically got to install the packages, got to go into the configuration files, and manually change them. With SLED 10, you know, there's a nice pretty menu. You go in, you click the button, and it works, you know? So they really go out of the way to make it a really easy experience for people who don't want to get, you know, down and dirty, you know, fussing with configuration files, you know.
Right.
And it's really geared towards the corporate desktop, but it's a nice desktop for somebody, you know, using Linux at home. They got Banshee with MP3 support out of the box. They got their customized version of OpenOffice. It's real nice, man. It's really impressive. It should be coming out by the end of the month. So it's something to look for. I actually got to do a little interview with Roger Levy, mm-hmm. and then I also talked to Pat Caroli, who was the maintainer of Xen. And what Xen is it's the old Ximian red carpet program that Ximian used to sell, the service to keep your systems up to date. It's cross-platform. It runs on Linux. It also runs on Windows, too. And you can like, maintain your desktops and servers and everything. And it looks pretty cool. You know, they've kept it up to date. They've, you know, moved it along. And that's another product that, you know, Novell pushes amongst their many other ones. You guys want to give a listen to the interview that I do with Roger?
Yeah, except for Pat? You're going to play it over there, Dan?
Yeah, I can play it now that we're not doing the Skype.
And okay. You're not going to have issues with it playing it on the same machine you're recording on?
No, I'm playing it through the other sound card. We got the two sound cards now. We're moving up in the world.
Hey, but you know what? Before we play, real quick, let me put a little blurb in for this.
All right, let's play this interview right now.
It's only 10 minutes.
My fine friends over at Pearson Education, Prentice Hall, sent me the Linux Starter Kit. Have you guys heard about this yet?
I've heard of it, yeah.
Linux Starter Kit. It's this little, it's a book and CD set, okay, which has SUSE in it. No, it has SUSE, is it SUSE 10.1? 10.1 that's out?
Yeah.
Looks really, really, I haven't installed the SUSE yet. I don't have a machine to install it on yet. I'm working on it. Cause I don't want to install it on something that's less than a gigahertz. That's just gonna make it rotten for me. So I'm looking for a faster machine I can piss without. But I'll install it, one of these days. But the book itself is really, really good. I would, if, for someone who's looking to get into like a corporate kind of desktop type of thing, which is really what SUSE is kind of going for, I would highly advocate, you know, checking that out. It's got, you know, it walks you right through the whole thing, the step-by-step stuff. Looks really nice. Good-looking book.
I would kill to have SLED 10 on my desktop at work.
Yeah?
I would be so happy if that was the case.
Yeah, see, now I really got to try that. I do not have a machine yet that I can install it on, but I will. Soon.
Put it on the list.
Soon. It's on my list. I have so much other, you know, horseshit going on with my father-in-law's computer that I've been installing shit on. Oh, man.
I read your post on your blog, man. You're going for help.
Oh, man. It's always, you know, you always got to run into that one person that's got to have that one
stupid
Windows
program
app.
That's like 8 years old already. Yeah,
that one Windows app that's like 15 years old that they got a nurse around. Like Dan's dad and his, what was it, your freaking dad's Juno mail or something like that? Dan? He didn't even
just my
attention.
Dad. Just my dad.
My dad's dual boot system. I set him up with a dual boot. He had Windows XP on his Dell box, and I did a dual boot for him. And the Windows partition took a dump, and he's been using just the Linux the whole time, and he's fine with it.
I got one of those light on DVD burners.
And how you been doing with that?
I got one from my dad. Mine works perfect, no problem. You know, plays DVDs. I watched a lot of. In fact, I got to get a DVD out of there. I didn't burn anything yet.
What are you waiting for, man? Go with the program.
Then.
Jesus.
Just, you know, what am I going to burn my own DVDs for?
So your kids can play coasters and you know, right. Throw them at each other.
I don't even have any recordable DVDs.
Use it for data.
I know. I just haven't had a chance to burn anything. Well, anyway, I threw it on my dad's machine, and which is his Windows. He wanted it on his Windows 2000 machine. And you know, this is what my dad does with a burner. He does the packet writing with it because he wants to throw a rewritable disk in there and write to it like a floppy disk. You know, he's got to do that. Not like burn a disk, but he's got to do that wacky packet writing to it, which he doesn't understand why it doesn't work when he tries to run it again later on down the line. It doesn't work right because it keeps flaking out under Windows. It reads it under his Ubuntu system just fine, but anyway... I installed some There's some DVD software it came with. What is it, Pat? It was laying around here. I had a copy of it.
What's that? They usually give you, like, Windows software. They give you, like, either a video editor or, like, Nero, one of those programs.
Well, Nero was... It came with Nero, but no, there was a DVD player, and I can't remember what it was. Well, the damn thing, I pop this thing in. I throw a DVD in there. You can hear the DVD playing. You can see the, like, the pop-up menu that comes up, like the little timer and stuff, but you can't see any video on it.
But did you try it under Wine? Maybe it'll work under Wine. You never know.
He's not running Linux on that machine.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, well, and it's just such a such a nuisance. And it's like, well, what the heck is wrong? You know. But some people recommend it.
K3B is fantastic for Linux, man. That's all I use most of the time.
But we were talking about Windows.
I know. You're going back to that, man.
Grow ISOFS, man.
Well, you know, if we're talking about Windows woes, and you know, on top of that, before we get to the interview, do you remember that wonderful Peanut Linux box? Right?
Right.
You mean the one that you did for your wife's friend?
Yeah.
This one here.
That was damn small, wasn't it?
No, Peanut Linux.
It was Peanut?
I had to come to a tough choice, tough decision today about that, and because I need to get it back to them. And the decision was, for what they wanted to use this machine for, Peanut Linux wasn't going to work for them. Because Peanut Linux, beautiful, fast, wonderful, easy to use, only one problem. Firefox was a hog on this thing. On that thing. You'd start up Firefox.
Try Opera?
I didn't even want to go down the route. I tried Firefox and it just dogged the system. And they want to go online and they want to... I think they're probably going to want to watch videos and look at Flash. And, you know, for how much of a dog Firefox was on there. Now, Dillo worked great, right? That was snappy, responsive. But Dillo... You know, you can't do crap with Dillo.
Yeah, it's
I mean, you
lame.
Can view the web, but
it's
don't
not really enjoyable.
Forget
though.
About like CSS support. Forget about
Flash or anything like
Flash
that.
Flash or any of that. But it's a great JavaScript. Browser. I mean, if you want a fast browser that's
light.
Graphical and light, Dillo is great. But it wasn't going to cut it more. So I talked to my wife and I said, well, I'm going to be moving. I'm not going to be around here to help them out. They want to connect to the internet with this thing. It's got like what, 32 megs or what was it, 48 megs of RAM, I think, or whatever it is on there. And I said, well, you know, I'm just going to bite the bullet and give them a copy of Windows 98 that I have lying around. Yeah, I know. It pains me. It really pained me. Because I was like, I fired it up today so I can run LSPCI so I can start tracking down the drivers beforehand. And I'm just looking at it like, oh, this hurts so bad because it's so pretty.
But it was like me installing Windows 98 from my father-in-law. But the only good part about that is I was installing Windows 98 inside Parallels on a Linux machine.
I had that run.
Parallels is freaking awesome.
Dude, what's
they
he running?
Popping over here.
What is he running?
He's at, I that box I put on my blog. It's a 3 gigahertz. It was a $200
no,
$200 Linspire computer.
What version of? He's running Linspire.
You know, I bought one of those $200 Linspire computers for him. It's a 3 gigahertz machine.
He's running Linspire?
Well, it came with 128 megs of RAM, but I went out to the computer show and got him a gig of RAM for it. And I put Ubuntu Dapper on it because Linspire, you know, hooray for Linspire, but, you know, I want something that I can manage.
See,
a
that's
bit
why
easier,
Parallels
so.
Ran for him.
Because
he's
Ubuntu.
Using Dapper.
I put Dapper on it.
2615.
2615.
Yeah.
You have.
2616. Anything 2616 or later is a problem with the installer.
Yeah, I ran into that problem too when I'm like, oh, I remember Pat talking about
this.
Yeah,
there's a kernel patch,
loop.
And of course, the installer loop out.
That was almost impossible to recover
I have just a regular.
Without rebooting.
You know, the regular Dapper.
I really want to check out Parallels.
Parallels. I registered it. I paid the $50, you know. If you're going to run something like, man, you really should buy it now before they up the price. You're going to up
here,
it to $80. If you're going to think you might use something like that, I would get it. Get it now. I even think it runs better than than VMware. Sorry, guys. I hate to say that. But one of the things I noticed that worked way better was the printer driver. Like, there's a pass-through printer driver there, which is something that he wants to be able to use, and that's all fine and good. And it works. It appears that it works under Parallels. However, it does not appear to work under, in fact, the error's out under VMware.
Winferlin is a freaking pig, man. Don't even bother with it.
You know what? I haven't even tried it. That didn't even come up it's in awful. My thought process. I thought VMware, Parallels, and QEMU. And QEMU is just slow, right? Like, it works.
Well, that's what Winferlin is, basically.
It works great. I don't have a problem with QEMU. And it's free. Hey, that's a wonderful thing. If you can deal with having your machine run at that speed, to was 233 megahertz, right?
Something like that.
That's just fine. I wanted a faster native speed, so I went with Parallels. And
you
it was 50 bucks.
33 megahertz.
Yeah, it was 50 bucks as opposed to 100 bucks to register a VMware copy. So I did that, and I don't regret it. It runs really, really well. So, yeah, I highly advocate
wickedly fast
hitting that Parallels site and registering yourself copy.
And how did your dad's software run?
Here's the pisser, right? I did all of that stuff, registered the software, and his original baseball for Windows program that he wanted to play will not run under any virtual machine that I tried. Will not install. It probably would run fine if I could figure out how to get it installed. It won't install. It keeps saying there's not enough memory or disk space.
But what, you know,
he has a new program that's really a lot like that, which installed and works just fine. And everything else I've tried installs too.
But what are they doing in that application?
I don't know, but I tell you what, I got it running under Wine. And it wasn't really very difficult to get running under Wine. You just kind of ignore all the error messages that pop up.
Just badge your way through it.
Just and then you get at the end and just start it up, and it looks like it's working. Unfortunately, he doesn't have like the data disk for me to try and get the game working. So,
how's he going to run it without the data disk?
Well, I think he's either going to see if he can get the data disk from the other guys in his league, or he's going to try and he's just going to scrap that particular game and go with the newer one.
Is this like a bunch of old guys just hanging out playing this thing?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That explains it.
It's like it's one of them fantasy baseball league kind of thing. They pick all these famous players from different things and put them in.
Burn up your time.
Yeah.
So why go all through all this trouble and not just let them run Windows?
Give them like
because
a little
Windows. Because I will not support Windows for free.
Yeah. Good for you, man.
I put my foot down. This is a long time ago. He used to have Windows on his computer, and I was over there, no lie, twice every 3 weeks. It had to be. twice every 3 weeks for like 6-8 hours at a clip, right?
Just kill your
reinstalling head. Every damn thing he had. This is no lie, man. Like, look back through my blog entries. You can tell.
Why don't you just get him go back?
And I finally... no. And because you go back to being, having all your viruses again.
Eventually.
Yeah. So,
go back to your computer.
Eventually, I told him, I was like, I'll do you a dual boot thing where you can have your Windows baseball game, but it won't connect to the internet. And then if you want to get on the internet, it'll connect through Linux. And that ran for like, what is it, 2-3 years? I never even had to touch it, right? Like, I updated his browser twice, I think. That's all I did. And he got a new printer. I put the new printer in. And now he just, it's at the point where he wants a newer, faster computer because he doesn't want to reboot.
Newer, faster.
Yeah. He doesn't, he didn't want to reboot, keep rebooting his system to get from Windows to Linux to Windows to Linux. So I said, well, the only thing that I could really think of quickly is that we can run your Windows stuff in an emulator.
Right.
Underneath Linux in a window.
You don't have to worry about the stupid viruses.
And, right. And then,
Well, you still do.
He said, well, what do I need to do that? And I said, well, you need a faster computer. So he said, all right. And this is, this is where we're at now.
You make a backup of the image, and if it dies,
the
image.
He did do his little complaining bit about, the other guys don't have these problems running Windows. And I said, well, here's the deal. I said, I'm more than happy, because I'm getting frustrated with this computer, right? I've had it for like 2 weeks in my house, and it's still just sitting there. So the other guy's doing problems with Windows, and what's the problem that I keep having problems all the time? And I said, well, I'll tell you what, he's badgering my wife about it too. I said, tell you what, you got to put your foot down right once in a while. I said, I'll tell you what, I'm more than happy to take my one registered copy of Windows 98 and I will tape it to the top of the computer and I'll bring it over to your house and drop it off and you can install it. And when it breaks down in a week, you can maintain it or you can take it down a block to PC Stop and Shop. I said it's $65 an hour for their bench rates. And I said, you can take it there 2-3 hours every week, every other week.
And pay them.
I said, and they'll fix it for you. But I said, I'm not going to touch it, you know.
I told that
to no, I don't have a problem with Linux.
So why is your father-in-law having all these problems if his friends can keep their machines running perfectly? Or do you think that's a cop-out excuse?
I think it's two things partially.
Italian.
Some of the websites he visits on a consistent basis have those kind of pop-up things, you know, that infect your computer, and he like persistently visits those kind of things. Yeah, spy websites. You know, websites that men visit, probably. But so I think that's a problem.
Discharges.org.
Yeah. I think that's a problem, and I think there also is a problem with, you know, like you said, the cop-out stuff where the other guys are saying, oh, you know, my stuff runs just fine, but it really doesn't. And I'm sure that a lot of it is the cop-off thing because he was also saying that the guys who were playing his game in his league with him were complaining about how they couldn't get the game to run on their XP.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm sure it was a cop-out. You know, I'm sure they got some old crappy, you know what I mean, 300 megahertz computer they've been nursing along.
Alan just jumped on the RC, man. He's alive.
Hey! Alan lives!
Should we?
Yeah, so that's, you know, pretty much
what I'm doing. Glad you put your foot down, man.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a problem doing it. You guys know me. I don't have a problem doing it at all. It gets me in a lot of trouble sometimes, but, you know.
Should we play the clip?
Yeah, let's play that clip.
10 minutes.
Roll that beautiful bean footage. All right, this is Pat's interview.
Roger Levy and Pat Caroli from Novell.
You know what? We didn't test this beforehand. I don't know what the audio is going to sound like. It's going to blow everybody's eardrums off. All right, here we go.
Hi, this is Pat DeVilla from the Linux Link Tech Show, and we're here with Roger Levy from Novell. Roger, thanks for being on the show. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. As always, Novell is very, very good to us and gracious and give us the time to talk about, you know, your great product and support of the Linux community. What are you guys exactly doing here?
Well, I think what we're doing is, you know, as we come out this summer with our SUSE Linux Enterprise 10 product set, it's a, you know, single platform that spans from desktop to mainframe. Extremely excited about it, both from the server perspective as well as the desktop. We now are introducing a very viable alternative for the enterprise desktop. I think what, you know, people will see is that there is the usability, the feature functionality that really makes this a very significant desktop product that people should evaluate. You know, there's lots of interesting dynamics going on in the desktop marketplace, upgrades coming out from, you know, the more established desktop players. We really believe that, you know, CIOs, as they look at the future of their enterprise investment in the desktop, should make that decision based on data. They really should evaluate this as the alternative. And, you know, regardless of whether, you know, they choose to go the route of the SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop 10 or not, that at least they're making an informed decision. They're making a decision based on data. We believe that if they do that, that a significant number of enterprises will see that from a total cost of ownership point of view, a usability point of view, feature functionality point of view, that this is the right decision for them.
I know in the talk someone made the point that this is a real big opportunity. Vista has been delayed. They're talking January. There is a possibility that it might be delayed even further than that. This is the window of opportunity that has opened. You guys are making a huge push on the enterprise desktop. What are some of the points that you're trying to stress to businesses that are looking at the Novell option, who are thinking of upgrading the desktop without sticking with Microsoft, making the jump? What it is exactly you're keying on?
Well, I think what we're keying on is two or three things. First of all, is total cost of ownership. I mean, with the SLED 10 solution, you know, with Open Office, you know, 2.0, Novell Edition on it, not only the first cost, but when you look across total cost of ownership, the ability to extend the life of existing hardware, extend the life of existing assets. We believe that the TCO here is significant for enterprises. So that's the first. The second is, we also have a desktop today that, based upon all of the work that's gone in human factors and usability, is in fact, we think, a significant step ahead from a an end user perspective in terms of their personal productivity, their ability to interact and use a desktop in the most efficient way, making less mistakes, and really actually enjoying the desktop as part of the experience, and then all of that backed by Novell and our decades of experience in the enterprise marketplace.
During the talk, you were talking about in a real world IT environments, people have a mixed environment.
Certainly.
You have mainframes, you got Unix workstations, Linux workstations, you got Windows desktops. You guys are willing to show that you have the strong desktop presence now, but you're also willing to commingle everything together.
Well, we've done a tremendous amount of work to get the desktop interoperating with key aspects of the enterprise environment. So a lot of work in terms of interoperability with Active Directory, plugins coming from Lotus Notes, ability to interwork with Evolution. So you have the capabilities of being able to fit into the printing environment, being able to fit into the security and single sign-on environments, and a tremendous amount of effort went into looking at interoperability here. Extremely complex space. You can't test every combination of permutation. So, as we move forward, there'll always be additional, work and additional, capabilities we're going to roll out. But that's been very much part of our thinking. We're very much realistic in understanding that any new product, regardless of where it's coming from, goes into an existing environment and has to fit into that environment.
Now, you guys do BrainShare every year, which is a really big get-together where you invite your partners and your customers to come together. What about going forward towards people, making an initiative to customers you don't have right now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is part of it, obviously.
Well, certainly. I mean, BrainShare this year in February was great. I mean, we had 4,000, plus people from partners, customers, potential customers. Really quite an amazing, I think, set of people coming together around, a common, view of the Novell solution set. As we move forward, events like this where we're bringing in, people from across the country, we have various other launch events planned, and, as we go through the summer, there's going to be a lot more activity here.
Now, Linux World Expo in San Francisco is coming up in August. Obviously, that's going to be a big event for you guys. Is there going to be any big marketing push around this?
As you can imagine, this is a significant, set of solutions coming from Novell. People will hopefully see quite a bit. It's going to be, a very significant launch activity for us around this. We've got a number of things planned, and, keep your eye open. You'll see some neat stuff coming.
Roger, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. And good luck with everything.
Well, Pat, thank you.
Thanks. Hi, this is Pat from the Linux Sling Tech Show. And we're talking to Pat Caroli from Novell. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm doing really good. It's really, really exciting to talk to you guys.
This is cool stuff, man. I came down here because I wanted to see what Novell was doing, with their roadshow going around showing people what the new SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop is doing in the server. It's pretty impressive what you guys are up to.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement in Novell, and the primary excitement is around two things, the SUSE Linux Desktop 10, obviously, and SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 10. Ironically, the desktop has gotten most of the focus, but we can't forget about the server, because within the server, we're going to be releasing things like XEN, the Xen virtualization technology that has the hypervisor layer. And once you get the Intel platform support or the AMD platform support for virtualization, you're now like breaking the market wide open for virtualization. Linux kernel that can run unmodified Windows or Linux distributions on top of it. So really leveraging that hardware investment that everybody has out there.
So what exactly do you do at Novell?
So I'm a technical specialist. My primary focus is a product called ZenWorks. And ZenWorks is a resource management tool that Novell has been distributing for probably about 8 years now. And the primary focus has always been the Windows desktop market, the NetWare, Linux, and Windows Server market. But basically being able to distribute applications centrally to remote systems, being able to manage the content, the data on those remote systems, doing things like remote control, policy procedure lockdown, provisioning of imaging and scripting of installations. So basically simplifying the installation management and day-to-day work that most of the administrators go through in an enterprise environment.
Now this product is the old Zimian product, right? This is what you guys bought when you bought Zimian.
So there's lots of components to the ZenWorks product set. A lot of the products were developed in-house by Novell. The ZenWorks Linux management product was acquired from Zimian. It was the Zimian Red Carpet product. We've basically brought it to a new level by adding in additional inventory capabilities and the imaging support and building a whole new back-end infrastructure that will support a lot of Novell's technology like tiered electronic distribution for replication services of data.
So basically this is to make administration of servers, desktops, and everything much easier for an admin day-to-day.
Yeah, and the great thing is cross-platform. So the admin doesn't have to just administer Windows boxes. It could be Linux boxes. It could be NetWare boxes. It could be Windows workstations or Linux workstations. It's basically really the only full-featured cross-platform administration tool that's out there.
Now, what's the current version? When was it released?
So ZenWorks 7 is the current version. That was released about 10 months ago. And we've got a service pack coming out the end of July, so it'll be 7.1. So lots of great enhancements there, specifically around our inventory collection services. And as we talked about a little bit earlier, some of the new features coming in Zen Linux Management.
It's fantastic stuff.
Great. Glad to see you guys here.
Oh, it's Novell, you know, you guys have treated us very well, and we really like what you guys are doing with the products that you're offering, as well as, you know, the dialogue that you have with the community. You guys are doing all the right things. All we need now is for everything to take off.
Yeah, glad we got the support.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Listen to Pat kissing Novell's ass.
Hey, man, they bought me breakfast and they bought me lunch.
That's good stuff, though, Pat. Good stuff.
It was a pretty impressive show they put on, you know. They did the whole demonstration.
Yep.
And there was actually another product that an outside vendor was. It was this company called IRCOM. They're from Jersey. And they have this product that's like a competitor to Citrix Server, but it was way nicer than Citrix Server. You guys are familiar with Citrix, right? You fire up a
window. Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, you fire up a window and you get like a VNC to a Windows server and you can run the applications through the window.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this thing was much nicer in that you could run the actual application. It looked like it was right on your desktop, even though it was going through a VNC virtual server.
Really?
Yeah, it was really cool.
And what was that called again?
The company was called IRCOM. Let me see if I can. I'll post the website.
Really? Yeah, I'd like to check that out because we're looking at rolling out some big solution for remote.
So much nicer.
Workers. And I hate to see them go with Citrix because Citrix is
so old.
Freaking expensive.
Yep. And expensive too.
Cruddy old. I can't stand it, man. Can't stand it.
So, Dan, how's life with your Nintendo DS Lite?
Two thumbs up.
You liking it?
You know what? I'm liking it a lot. And I'm actually liking Nintendogs. In fact, I got to take my dog out every day.
Where is it,
man?
Let me see it. Do you have it here?
I
haven't even seen it. All I see is pictures in the
It's downstairs.
See, he always does that. He always says, I got this cool little gadget. And then you say, well, where is it? Oh, it's, you know, I don't have it. It's my car or something.
No, I'll show it to you on the way out. I want to get a really involved role-playing game on it for some reason. I don't know which one to get, though, and I don't know when I'll be able to get it. Actually, I started playing Gradius again on it, the Game Boy Advance. Gradius Generations or something like that. It's a Game Boy Advance game, but it plays Game Boy Advance games.
See, now, it's little gizmos like that, little cool shit that makes me wish that I was more of a gamer. Because, like, the gamers, they always have the nifty little, you know, the cool things they can carry around and stick in their pocket and shit. And what do I got? I got a laptop.
You know what's really cool about it? I whip out the Mario Kart. And I could play on through the Wi-Fi connection down there. Yeah, I could play people in Japan. I could play people all over the world. And pretty soon I'll be playing Gorkon as soon as we get our act together and play, you know, we're on at the same time. But it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
The only thing that make it better is if it ran Linux. But
yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. Is the DS is as good as it is. I can only imagine how wonderful the Wii is going to be.
Wii!
Whip it out.
It's a really bad name.
Yeah, and the new Super Mario Brothers is really cool.
That's not any worse than Sled, right? Sled, which means hooker in Denmark.
Dutch.
Or like
Dutch. They're not supposed to call it Sled, but they all do.
What are they supposed to call it? I thought that's what they were calling it.
Linux Enterprise Desktop.
Oh. They should call it the Link-approved desktop.
That's right. Well, I can't put my stamp of approval on it yet because I have not played with it yet. I will. I will. That is my promise. Even though I badmouthed SUSE because it has such a monster freaking huge, you know, install, I will make myself go through it and check it out just because the Novell guys have been so cool to us.
They've been very good to us,
over
man.
The years. A token of my appreciation is that I will somewhere find a computer to run that damn desktop on to check it out. And I expect that it'll be fine. You know what I mean?
For corporate desktop, I would love to have that.
I expect it to be, it'll work right along and do its thing and just be a happy little kind of deal. I'm sure I've seen like pictures of it. It looks wonderful. I just haven't used it yet because I ran into Ubuntu Dapper, which just happens to do what I want to without me screwing with it a whole lot. So
it just works.
Bing, you know, and that's where it is on my corporate desktop because I do not have time to screw with stuff most of the time. Just get it on there, get it working, and have it be unobtrusive. You know what I mean? Kind of like Slackware. Unobtrusive once it's running.
You know what? I should have my wife come up and say goodbye because she leaves on Saturday.
Yeah.
We're never going to see her again?
Sure we will.
No, we're going out to, in August, we're going to go to...
we're going to go to the Tiki Bar.
When?
Tiki Bar. In August.
We're going to have a Tiki
Let's
Bar.
Let's do it, man.
Yeah, but that'll be the last time you'll see her for a long time. Tiki Bar. I should have her. You know, and Saturday will be... the last time she'll be here on a Wednesday night until I move down there. No nookie. No nookie. Except Link will be here. Come for me on Wednesday night. Let me get Alan in here and then I'll go see if the wife wants to come
on. See what the hell he's got to say for himself tonight.
Ooh, I'm not going to do the show. I'm going to go buy a bike.
Bastard.
Where is he? No. Does he? Have I ever even put him?
Is he on Skype? Are you on Skype, Alan? Where the hell are you?
Oh, there he is. Skypey doo, Skypey doo.
Was his username like Gay Porn Alan or something like that?
That's Skype.
Hello.
Hello.
Evening, everybody.
How you doing, Alan?
Not too bad. Does it sound all right?
Yeah. Yeah, are you on your Linux box or you actually on a Mac?
No, I'm on the Mac right now.
What a surprise.
Holy mackerel.
It's just easier.
Speaking of Mac, Alan was nice enough to loan me Mac OS 8 because Dan gave me the old, he gave us these old G3 Apple laptops.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's an old world Mac, it's not working for me. Because it's an old world Mac, you have to install an old version of Mac OS on there to get it to boot into the Linux install CD.
Right.
Well, I tried using the OS 8 on there, and it would not boot into it.
You know you have to hold the C key down.
I know. I tried that.
The whole time, right?
It kicked out this message saying it was incompatible.
All right. Well, the one that I gave you
I'm going to try that.
I just gave him OS 9. And I actually checked that.
You tried it on that laptop?
Yeah, I checked it before I, I have it installed on there. I installed it on there after I got the laptop home, cleaned it up. Works fine. But put that in there, keep your C key held down, it'll boot up for you. If it doesn't, there's something wrong with your CD drive.
It's a possibility.
Because mine went right through.
That is definitely.
I had 9 somewhere, but I couldn't find that disc.
Link brought it tonight, so I have this. Next time you show up, I'll give you CDs back.
Okay, no problem.
I appreciate it, though. So you got a new toy, huh?
Got a new toy, yeah.
How much did that cost you, and did you tell your wife yet?
Actually, my wife told me to buy it.
Really? Ooh.
On it, yeah. Like I said on the chat, I actually went in to buy a pair of gloves on it and a headlight for the other bike.
Why can't I get a wife that like that, man, going to buy a pair of gloves and she tells me to buy a
buy a motorcycle.
Well, she actually liked the color, too, so.
Cool.
So, it's her color, she said.
Alan, how do I sound, man? I got a new microphone.
You're actually louder than everybody. I can actually understand you without
any problem at all. See, that's awesome.
I got a Samson Q7.
Okay.
$89.
Oh, that's a good price, yeah.
Good stuff.
So Erin's here. She's going to say goodbye to us, a tearful farewell.
Oh, you want
farewell.
Tears? Oh, God, no. I don't.
She was gonna be a cheerleader, you know?
That's no.
Yay!
Get the hell out of Lehigh Valley. Yay!
Get rid of the geeks.
No.
Hooray!
What am I going to do without the geeks cluttering up my house once a week?
You'll have to
every
get some,
week.
You'll have to listen, geeks. Yeah.
I think we'll probably acquire a new, what would it be, a gaggle of geeks?
Sure.
A swarm
at
of
least
geeks?
A new
we'll
set,
rig it up so that we have a video on. Phone in between
oh,
us, you know.
Oh, good.
That way you can
I can look
can
at your smiling,
all,
handsome faces every week,
that's
right?
Exactly.
You're
right.
Very nice.
Dan has a eyesight there. I got one, so we can keep
oh, there we go.
There you go. No, I am going to miss y'all a lot. And I'm terrible at goodbyes. I really do suck at them. So,
well, you don't have to worry about it because, you know, next month we're all going to go out and get slashed at
the
tiki
bar. I yes, and I'm going to hold y'all to that because.
Who's driving?
Not me.
I'll get my wife to drive. She doesn't drink.
All right. Very good. And that's all I'm going to say. You know, y'all are still doing the show together, you know, same as every week, just a little different arrangements.
Yep.
Right? All right.
Yep.
All right. Well,
slightly
very good.
Different, yeah.
Well, good luck.
I'm going
to. Good luck in your job.
Thank you. I'm going to need it. I have no idea what I've signed up for. So.
Yeah. Just definitely good luck and make sure that you have some spare couch space for us so that we can, you know, drop by.
And we do have plenty of space. I'm not going to broadcast the address because that would be really dangerous, but we do have plenty of space and a spare bedroom. So.
You're going to set up a all MySpace right. Webpage with the instructions to get the house.
Yes, and every 14-year-old in America will show up.
Google Maps.
And all their 46-year-old creepy male stalkers. Anyway, that's it for me. Y'all take care.
Good luck.
See ya.
Where are you going with my DS?
I don't know. Someone handed it to me.
I handed it to her because I was done with it. I don't want to set it down over here, have it fall off, and then I would
have
bad.
Pat steal it, the bastard.
Yeah. Some bitch.
What time is it?
No. All right, so Alan's going to sell me his old bike, right, Alan?
We can talk, yeah.
Hook me up, man.
I'll hook you up.
So how much did you pay?
I got my wallet in my pocket. I'll be over after the show.
Okay.
So how much did you pay for the guard wing? How much was it?
A lot.
Yeah, I bet it
it's
was.
It's actually a used model. It's a 2005.
I know. Where did you get that?
It only has 2,000 miles. Up in Coopersburg.
Oh, you didn't get it at the BMW guy, right?
No, I didn't go over there. Like, this was sort of an impulse thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's
went
always
for
an
gloves.
Impulse thing with Alan.
Go in for gloves, come out with a gold wing. I wish I had impulses like that. I wish I could afford to have
the
impulses like that.
Bank account to back
right?
up those impulses.
Gee.
Well, are you calling that bike the Timmy bike?
No, it's
the Timmy
not
toucher.
That.
It's got Tim McGraw's face painted on the saddle, right?
No,
right in the appropriate spot.
No, it doesn't.
He's like looking up at you, going
right in the crotch.
Nothing like that. I'm sorry.
And
right
that's
where his wife wanted
right,
to buy.
Right where you put the gas nozzle is the gas tank right there at the is where his ass
picture
is.
Picture of a butt. Yeah.
In fact, the gas cap is his.
That flips
is his
right,
pants.
That flips down right in front of you.
Oh man.
That flips down right in front of you, Dan.
Oh
yeah.
Man. Damn,
that's a nice bike there.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
You know, I got my hair cut today, and the lady said the guy that was just in before me was mentioning about some guy who was riding on a motorcycle got creamed like right up the street from where I live.
Whoa.
And good thing
yeah,
it wasn't
happens.
You.
Splat.
Yeah, it happens. I've been riding since I was like in fourth grade, though.
You know what? You know, I,
myself, I'm safe.
I didn't
the other
say
idiots.
It was good. Yeah, I didn't say it was, you know, necessarily you. It's the other people that you got to watch out for, too.
The real scary ones, there was this, I was waiting because I had to buy Carolyn a helmet, and I'm waiting for my cousin to wait on me. And this kid comes over, and he's just buying, there's a used, I think it was a 999 or 990. It's one of the big Honda crotch rockets. And I hear him say he's never ridden a bike before. And he's, like, matching his helmet to the color of the bike.
Oh, man.
I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the dangerous one. This guy's got, like, a 900cc, and he's never ridden a motorcycle.
Yuppies. Yuppie alert. Yuppie alert. We got to have the matching boots and jacket and helmet, you know, to match the color of the motorcycle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's a black motorcycle, so pretty much any freaking helmet you could have gotten there would have matched. I was like, well, you know, is the flat back black, does that look better than the glossy one? And he's asking this guy, and the guy's like, they all look really good.
Listen, puss, it's a helmet. Buy one, right?
Yeah. Now you're going to spend $2 on a helmet or $3 on a helmet. It's a black bike. It doesn't make a freaking difference.
Oh, man.
You're probably going to drive around without it anyways.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania, you don't have to wear a helmet if you don't want to. It's not advisable, but you could if you want to.
Well, I always wear one. I've tried that a couple times, and I'm not comfortable without it. But, you know, the people who want to ride without one, they can go right ahead. It doesn't bother me at all. I stopped over at my mother-in-law's apartment because I had to pick up Carolyn. And this lady comes by, and she stops the car, and she's like, thank you, sir, for wearing a helmet. I'm like, okay, no problem.
Did she give you a kiss?
No, she was driving by in her car, so she drove away. But it was just slightly interesting.
People are weird, you know?
Because I had just gotten off the bike, and I just took my helmet off, and I'm like, oh, what the hell are you? I'm parked in a no-parking zone. I'm like, oh, this lady's going to, like, bitch at me for parking in a no-parking zone. And she rolls down the windows, thank you. And I was like, okay, thank you very much.
Link, did you actually get to install Linux on that laptop? Or you just did the Mac OS install?
I just put Mac OS on. I did partition it so that I have, like, a gig something free.
How big did you make the OS 9 on it? Like 200 meg?
It was 800 megs or something like that. I could have done it way, way smaller, I'm sure.
That's what I'm going to do, I think. I hope it's not the CD drive that's
flaking out.
You can
get away with 70, 80. I'm pretty
sure. 100? You think 100 I can get by?
Oh, yeah.
Just do the minimal install, right?
Yep. All you need to do is just get system files working, and then you can drop
it.
Yeah,
you can do it in like 200 megs if it's even that much.
I used to do it under OS 7 something is free, right? OS 7 something?
Yeah,
7.5. I used to do it under that, and I used to do it in like 10 megs, 15 megs or something like that. That's all you needed?
It's nothing.
Yeah, because all you need is enough to get it to boot. That's really about it.
Yep. So it's got to boot. It's got to have enough room for the system folder where you drop your bootex and your kernel and crap in there, and you're done.
So Dan, you're not playing with the GP2X anymore? It's in the
No,
corner?
No, I do. I play with my GP2X.
Dan's playing with his little...
sounds personal,
little
Dan.
Toy over there. It's pretty neat.
Dan likes his toys.
He's got a name for it. It's my GP2X.
Alan, you should be here, man. It is. Link is smelling something sweet.
Yeah, smelling buddy. I'll
put up with the fact that I drove past a skunk on 611. So.
Well, you know, I have to think about things here. Like, I have to compensate for coming in here, you know, and you're trying to figure out what Dan had for dinner before the show. and whether the atmosphere is going to back in, you know.
Pork the other way, meat.
Yeah, so you have to compensate kind of for that a little bit. And say, well, if I wear something overpowering, that might overpower the stench of Dan's ass.
It's special.
It's tasty. Sweet.
So we got anything else for tonight?
Under Armour.
Here we go.
What are you playing, Mario Kart?
That's cool.
Now, can you play video files on that thing? Or is it just strictly games?
I think it's strictly game. I think they have like a video player for the GBA, which you could probably put in here, but not like anything that you want to watch.
How do you know what I like to watch?
No, I mean, it's like, you know, like kids stuff.
I mean, you can put porn on it?
Well, he knows what you like to watch. He puts that meat spin up there. You know?
Yeah. Don't Gilmore Girls.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you can't really, you could get, I guess, an adapter on here and download stuff. You could run Linux on it, but I haven't.
Can you play those, any of those video codecs or no? Like DivX?
I don't know. I haven't really looked into it. Maybe, I don't know. If you have the Linux version, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to say goodnight to my doggy. I took him out for a walk, let him poop and pee.
Put him to sleep.
That's if you get to the advanced mode, you got to put the doggies to sleep.
I thought you were talking about your real dog.
Oh, no. My real dog's in South Carolina.
I thought you told me you put him to sleep.
Wouldn't do that. That's terrible.
There's too much trouble to lug around and move.
Yeah, that's,
so you just took him to the vet and put him out. Put him out of his misery.
That'd be, you know what? First off, if I was going to do something like that, I don't think I'd have the guts to take him to the vet. I'd have to take him out and like shoot the dog or something. Because they look at you pretty.
Damn, drags shoot him in a backyard.
Pistol. Bow right in the head.
I would not do that.
We're gonna get a call from PETA now.
Yeah.
Kids, they're going to have protest. He gave the address. We're going to have protesters out in front of his house tomorrow.
No, man, but when we came home, man, those. Oh, yeah, I talked about that last week, didn't I? The dead rabbits the cats threw in the.
Oh, it's amazing when rabbits come home with. I mean, the cats come home with. They come home with little bunnies in their mouths and dead birds and all that such a crap.
You hear him outside, my cat outside, he's.
He's howling. Horrible sound.
He's got and a you look out there, you. And sometimes it's still alive, and he lets it go, and then he chases after it and picks it up. And,
so, do we have anything? Any other technical things to talk about before we close out the show tonight?
I'm technicaled out myself, actually. It's a whole holiday.
A lot of interesting
thing, you know?
Complaints going around these days.
Got the HIV?
No. About Linux on cell phones and how there's no compatibility between cell phone distributions or handheld or embedded Linux distributions. That one company produces a Linux handheld cell phone and the applications won't run on another company's. And so
did they come to some kind of agreement or something? Different manufacturers?
That's what they're working on.
There was an announcement like last week about this.
Yeah, there is. And hopefully that will be a reality.
Because I know Motorola has a couple of Linux-based phones that they sell.
Which, you know, it kind of brings me around to that other thing, too. After playing around with Ubuntu and on my wife's computer and hearing everybody talking about how it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it is a really good distribution. It gets me thinking about, well, maybe I should be running Ubuntu too, even though I love Arch. And I almost broke down and installed it because I... You'll love this, Link.
Link is shaking his head.
What?
Yeah, he's talking like Ubuntu is like... Freaking made by Microsoft or something, you know? Like it's the evil spawn of Linux, you know?
They did piss off Mike Schroeder.
I almost touched it, but I thought, no, I have to stay pure.
No, I upgraded Arch, right? And the kernel came down, and I ran Lilo, and I rebooted it, and had the kernel panic, and I couldn't find the root files or something. I was like, oh man, here I go again. But see, I'm smart because I've had this happen in the past. So I always
it's a regular occurrence in our Arch to have to screw with stuff because your kernel doesn't work anymore.
No,
all of a
it's
when
not
you, when you upgrade.
It's not the kernel usually.
I almost said
now you know why I run Ubuntu, right?
I said to myself, all right, I've had you know maybe this is it. Maybe I should try Ubuntu. And then I said, no, I'm not. I could fix this. This is a simple fix. See, the problem was
everybody.
The
does
problem
that.
Was way back about 3 or 4 kernels ago, right? I did the make init RAM file system, but I named it something different than the standard Arch name.
And then he forgot the name.
And then when this new one came out, it named it the standard Arch name, and that's why the init RD couldn't get the init RD because it was under a different name than in my Lilo. So I always keep an old kernel on my Arch box. So I just, you know, booted into that old kernel, copied over, you know, changed the stanza in Lilo, and then reran Lilo, and then that was it.
Well, of course. I mean, everybody does that all the time. Every time you upgrade your kernel, right?
Yeah.
I mean, hell, I do that, what, 3-4 times a day? Come on.
But see, now... Now, they got me thinking, though. One of the problems is, and I absolutely love Arch. It runs great. It runs fast. And sometimes it provides me with a technical challenge, which is what I like in a distribution.
Dan likes breaking his machines.
But what I notice more and more of is a lot of software.
It's like a game show
out.
Or something. Like, I'm going to come in. I'm going to do my updates today and see what's broken.
And I watch and I look at it, like Ubuntu, and I see more and more companies that are putting out packages for Ubuntu. And, you know, you get your standard RPMs. But, you know, not a lot of people are building Arch packages except for the Arch users themselves.
Nope. And we had that issue with trying to install VM Player. Remember that? You had to go in and edit the configuration script and, you know, install script and manually change it so that it would install to the Arch directories where everybody else has their, you know, their own thing.
Do you know you don't have to do that under Slackware? I just want
to
point
that
out.
I have to say, listen.
I just want to point that out.
What is Slackware going to come with 2.6 kernel by default? That's what I'm
saying. They're working on it.
Link doesn't care.
That's what I want to know.
It doesn't matter.
He doesn't care.
Keep running 2.4 kernel.
It doesn't matter. You know what? The software that I'm using, like the major apps that I'm using, like Thunderbird and Firefox and crap like that, they don't give a rat's ass whether it's a 2.6 kernel or not. They really don't. They don't care. And so, I don't care either. That's just
you know,
all
yeah, I'm the not only reason I went up to 2.6 was to get the video card working, the TV card.
TV tuner card.
Yeah, that was the only reason I went to
2.6. There you go. See? So, it really doesn't matter. Unless you're using something that specifically requires the 2.6 kernel, who gives a shit?
Are they going to come out with a package system?
They have a package system.
No, a modern package system that's easy to use and automatic.
That is easy to use.
You can do an automatic install, and off it goes, and it downloads all your packages and checks all the dependencies.
No, you don't want it to check the dependencies.
Why not?
That's the point of having the package manager like that. Because a lot of times the dependency checking is what breaks everything, you know?
There's not enough packages out there to check dependencies.
Yeah, that's what breaks everything is the fucking dependency check.
Slackware's solid, don't get me wrong.
Oh, it is a great distribution.
Besides, if you install your own shit, you don't need to have a package manager.
Burr.
What is that crap?
You know, 1998, damn it.
Pussy distribution's got to have a package manager. And you will resolve my dependencies. Oh, man.
Says the guy who's running Ubuntu on his main.
I know, right? Are you kidding? App getaway, baby. App getaway.
Just compile.
Yeah, compile the damn thing and get it over. Be a man.
You know what I'd like to have?
.slash Jacosha.
That's right.
I'd like to have Jacosha.
We gotta try that out.
If it did depend on like some like ultra super alpha version of GStreamer over there. Every time I look at it, it's like another three versions away from what the one I'm using.
There's a package for Ubuntu out there.
Oh yeah,
I'll have to check it out. I have an M-Audio audio card. It's a four input.
But don't you have to update the GStreamer to the developmental?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the instructions and how to. So I gotta look at it.
It's the same thing with PityV. I'm thinking to myself, you know, who's going to use this software if it's...
They're not. They're making it so that it's not going to work on anybody's system for another 4 fucking years. That's what the problem is.
No, I think
it's out. What about us guys that run Slackware, huh? I'm really behind. That's going to be like sometime in the next century.
Do they even have GStreamer on Slackware?
I don't even know.
They actually do. There is a repository for audio applications for Slackware.
Yeah.
This Russian dude runs it. It's actually very good.
What runs in it?
I'm Russian. I have your audio.
There's a website dedicated to like all like audio applications for Slackware.
There's
all the packages out there. I remember this because I used to run Slackware.
There is an audio. And I think it's in a Swarik conf file.
It's like the Planet CCMRA for Fedora. It's the same kind of deal. It's like a repository for like all the audio multimedia. I have an M-Audio Delta 44 card. We should try putting together just a recorder box. And if Jacosha worked, that would be great. I'd throw Ubuntu on there and check out Jacosha if it works. Hey, I don't have a problem checking it out and trying it out. We'll see. You know, maybe it's time to put Audacity to bed if it's better than Audacity. Can handle multi-line inputs.
It is, and they're still working on it, though. So
it's very alpha.
It does look like it's going to be, you know, the stuff when it gets ready.
Well, I have a card that can handle 4 inputs.
I'd be real excited to see it, you know.
If we can record 4 channels at once,
see it come to fruition.
That would be perfect. I'm there.
And I think I just saw, I was just reading past it the other day. And, I know I'm talking, turning my head, talking past the mic because I had to scratch my nose. So, you know, give me a little slack there.
Just as long as you don't scratch your ass.
No, I was reading past it the other day on something, and something caught my eye about overlaying. Like, you can go through the music and overlay stuff in it, too, as it's going, I think. And that sounds really good to me. You know what I mean? Like being able to play stuff and overlay tracks on the top of it live as you're going. That would be awesome.
Yeah, like you have one. It's like multi-tracking.
Yeah.
You got a couple tracks going, and you could add tracks as you record.
That'd be awesome.
Let's see what he's got. I'm looking at Getting Tricoser. He's got SVN, yeah. To run it, you'll need to have Python GStreamer 0.10 and PyGTK installed. It's a Python script. It's all Python base.
I was going to say, isn't the whole thing Python based?
I think so, yeah. I'll have to check it out, man.
But it's, you know, it's got like all this stuff that you can have except for the GStreamer, which I think is... like my GStreamer under Arch is version 0.8.12.
Yeah, he's got 0.10, which is pretty much alpha.
Yeah,
leading edge, man. The thing is, that's where all the cool features and all the shit's been cleaned
right,
up.
Right.
Except we won't see that for another 10 years down the line.
No,
right?
Probably a year.
A year. And then by then it'll be based on a point.
Yeah, and then you'll all be sitting there looking at me going, when are you going to, you know, update yourself to something better than just that Jacosher crap? You and that Jacosher running on your Slackware crap, man.
I'll try.
How come you don't got a package manager? The dependencies.
Because it's 2006, man. That's why you need a package manager. 2006. Not 1998. 2006.
Hey, well, you know what? Slackware been running since
Slackware has the simplest package manager to use.
That's right.
Unless it's not in the tar.gz format, it never gives you an error. Runs perfectly.
Puts it right in there. And
doesn't mean you can use a package when you install it. It just means that it's installed.
Yeah, if you use check install, yeah. Makes a nice little package for you.
Yeah.
It's easy to clean up your old files when you're ready to install something
new. It's really easy right to clean up after.
Yep. Check install is great. I love it.
It's like when I put a system together, that's like the very first thing that goes on it is check install if it's not already there.
Yeah. And that's what...
See, that's why I like the Arch package systems.
Arch is awesome, man.
Easy to build a package for. Arch. It's the other white meat.
The other Slackware.
Yeah, it is the other Slackware.
Arch
right.
Arch is the other Slackware.
It's Slackware with a package manager. That's
Slackware with a new kernel and a package manager.
Or, as Pat would say, a package manager that works.
Package manager that works. All right.
Should I do some Frapper shout-outs?
Do it. Shout them out, man.
Do it, man. Do it. We've got Bjorn Munnens from Leuven, Belgium. We've got Phil Becker from State College, PA. We've got Jim Garrett from... he just says Maryland, USA. We've got Jay from Houston, Texas, USA. That's it.
That's hey!
Slowing down, man. We got to get some
Frappers. Hey, you couple of people there.
Next week we got Maria Winslow on, who we were supposed to have a couple of months ago, but she couldn't make it.
She wrote the book. What's the book?
You got the book.
What's the book?
The Manager's Guide to Open Source.
Open Source, yeah.
Yes. Did you read it?
Good stuff. I got like 3/4 of the way through
it. It's a good book.
Nobody else could read it because nobody else got it except for you two. Well,
that's because you weren't here.
You, huh?
Uh-huh.
You weren't here when I had the books.
What do you mean I wasn't here when you had
which
the books?
You weren't here when I got the books.
Where was I?
There you go.
Somewhere else.
Off gallivanting along getting Sonic that you didn't bring back for me, you bastard, you.
Dude, I've been here the past 3 months.
You were gone a week.
You were gone.
One week, we did a show without you.
You were gone eating that lovely cheeseburger that you sent the picture of. You know, you're just flaunting it in front of the fat man over here. And that's just
with
not
the
cool.
The bacon hanging out of your
cheek. It's not cool. It's not cool. You do not grab a Sonic cheeseburger and do the chipmunk picture in front of a fat man. I don't like that at all. It's not cool.
Well, you know what? Sonic is coming to the Lehigh Valley, baby.
Where is it, where is it coming to?
Probably Allentown.
No, 191 in Bethlehem.
Oh,
when? Oh, nice.
I don't know when, but they're going to be building
hell?
It.
Don't
so.
Freaking, you know, don't do that.
We're there, man.
You get my hopes all up and everything, and I was going to, like, go there tomorrow and, like, be banging on it.
No, yeah,
give me a cheeseburger.
I'm getting sick of Sonic.
Give me a cheeseburger. I've been waiting for, you know, Gorkon to send me some good food and stuff, and he won't do it either. You know, I've been waiting for some rally stuff.
Speaking of which, you guys want to get a booth at that?
Punking out on me, you know.
In Columbus and end of September?
I think we should definitely.
It's only
like $75,
Mark. You know?
Definitely should.
It's cheap.
Talk about it.
You should do it. Aaron from.
Man,
yeah,
Pat quit already to tech? Jeff had a.
I'm out of here, man.
I got to go to
faster
work.
Faster than me normally.
And that's fast.
So two thumbs up for the new
Alan
microphone.
Is fast.
Oh, you know what? I never had a song for this week to play.
That's your problem.
Dum 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 dum.
Na 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 na.
Gorka is picking on me now. Tell me, are you hungry? Yes, I'm hungry.
In 2 weeks, we got Cecil Watson coming out from the Not Myth Project. Supposedly, he's got a big announcement for us.
Ooh.
Who? What?
Cecil Watson from the Not Myth Project.
Ooh. He's going to come up with a Not Myth distribution that works.
Work for me.
Ooh. Want to some way.
Work for me, man.
Want to some way. Oh, man. All right. So that's it. We're gonna play out with something. What do you got over there?
Doesn't look like it.
I got something.
You got something. He's got something.
I'm putting something together here. Yeah, it might take me an hour, but I'm putting something together.
You can always play my old band songs. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. I don't have them on this computer, though.
Get a good laugh out of it.
What was that?
Play one of those songs that the guy gave us his entire
freaky
collection.
Freaky songs. What the hell is it?
I forget what the hell the name of it is.
Wouldn't you like to know? Or what the hell was that?
Yeah, that one there.
Yeah, Doba.
Wouldn't you like to know?
I have like bad dreams with that music playing in the background. He really should license that crap out. You know that? That'd go really good. Yeah, it'd go really good with something like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something in the background.
Ouch.
There he
that's
is.
Fucking like hurting, dude.
Come out to play.
All right, I have a song. We can go. We can play out now. All right.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
No, wait a minute. Damn it. Why does it do this?
If we check to make sure you're still recording.
Oh, I know why it won't play, because Alan's on the Skype.
Hang up on him.
Alan, I got to hang up on you.
All right.
Good night, Alan.
See you all later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's nice, man.
How about that, huh? Come on, close.
Slick.
That's why it won't work. There we go. Here we go.
A real microphone. That's nice.
I am man. Hear me roar. The number's too big to ignore. And I'm way too hungry to settle for chick food. Cause my stomach's starting to growl, and I'm going on the prowl for a Texas double whopper. Man, that's good. Oh, yes, I'm a guy. I'll admit I've been fed quiche. Way tofu, bye-bye. Now it's for whopper beef I reach. I will eat this meat till my innie turns into an alley. I am star. I am incorrigible. Stop a big burger, beef, bacon, jalapeno, good thing down.
Yeah!
I am hungry.
I am hungry.
I am incorrigible. I am man.
The Texas Double Whopper. Eat like a man, man.
Oh, sorry. This little fishy needs his growing food.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm, yeah, with my tongue brush. It's over.